Okay, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the TRPA Governing Board meeting. We're going to call the meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, December 14th, 2022, and it is 1:38 p.m. The first item on the agenda is to call the roll to determine a quorum. Maria?
Ms. Aldi?
Here.
Mrs. Sagaski?
I'm here.
Ms. Conrad Seda?
Here.
Ms. Diss?
Here.
Ms. Faustinos?
Here.
Mr. Friedrich?
Here.
Ms. Gustafson?
Here.
Mr. Hicks?
Here.
Ms. Hill? Ms. Hill will circle back in a moment. Mr. Honigman?
Here.
Mr. Lawrence?
Here.
Ms. Novosel?
Here.
Mr. Rice? Ms. Williamson?
Here.
Mr. Yates?
Here.
And Ms. Hill? She's on. She can't communicate with us. Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you. And I think those other members are trying. Belinda's on, but I think we're trying to get both Wes and Alexis back on. Before we get started, we'd like to recognize a former TRPA Governing Board member, Roland Westergaard. He passed away in October of this year. He was the director of Nevada's Department of Conservation and Natural Resources and the DCNR appointee on our board for 15 years. Many of you remember Roland. We just wanted to acknowledge his dedicated service before we begin this meeting. Jim, I didn't know if you wanted to add a comment there. I know I'm off script, but.
Well, no, it's terrific that we're, honoring Roland this morning. I first got to meet Roland when I was a TRPA planner, and he would beat me up over buoy permits. So, no, all around, as far as the service to TRPA, when I was here, he was just, one of the best board members ever. Then I got to work with him in his capacity as head of DCNR and, the work he did and just negotiating complex water issues in particular. It's just a great loss and what a great human being, Roland. So
thank you.
All I can say.
And thank you all for indulging us in that moment. We'll move on and I'll read the rules for the day. For the members of the public who are joining us remotely to observe the meeting, go to trpa.gov. Under the calendar heading, click on the Governing Board Hybrid Meeting for December 14th, 2022. There you will find a link to the public webinar hosted on Zoom. To address board members directly with your comments, raise your hand in Zoom by clicking Raise Hand at the bottom of your screen at the appropriate agenda item. With your hand raised, you will be unmuted by TRPA staff and have 3 minutes to address the board. If you have used the dial-in numbers to join us by telephone, you can dial *9 to raise your hand and be unmuted. To remote board members, if you wish to speak, please also raise your hand in Zoom. You will find the hand icon on the bottom of your screen. Remote board members may not use the chat box to make any comments or to have sidebar conversations. Please, everyone, remember to mute your mic unless speaking to cut down on background noise. And finally, I would also like to ask that all remote members turn on their cameras if they are able. And to those of you out there in the audience today, members of the public who have joined us in person, please raise your hand at the appropriate time for public comment, and you will be called on to the front to speak. Board members who are in person, you can raise your hand or signal me in some way. Sometimes I don't see you when you raise your hand. Jump in and I'll call on you to speak. And then just remember to ensure that your microphones and speakers are turned off to prevent feedback in the room. So next is our Pledge of Allegiance, and I'm going off script again. I would like to ask Sue, Bill, and Barbara to all three lead us in their final board meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance. And you'll have to coordinate. She is. She's coming up.
Come on.
All right, let's go. Okay. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I think we did really good.
Yeah, that was right.
Thank you. Thank you. Since it's each of their last meetings today, we wanted to pull out all the stops. There's one.
Maybe sing the Star-Fed Stainless Banner. Well.
Okay, we'll move on to item three, and this is the approval of the agenda. Staff, are there any changes to today's agenda?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Julie Reagan, Executive Director. And yes, at the request of multiple board members, our staff suggests pulling consent item number 5, the Latitude 39 mixed-use residential and commercial project from consent onto the main agenda. And we would take that item up for consideration and discussion after the rest of the consent item on number 5. So if you want to proceed with the regular consent, we could then slot it in immediately after.
Okay, thank you. Are there any objections from the board? Then we will deem the agenda as amended. We'll deem it approved. We'll move on now to approval of the minutes, item 4 on our agenda. We have the minutes from October 26th, 27th meetings on page 49 of your packets, and from the November 16th, 2022 meeting on page 135 of your packets. Does any board member of the board wish to make a change?
Surprise.
I just automatically looked that way.
Now, listen, you know, staff does a great job, and I'm not tinkering with anything that anyone else has said. I'm just tinkering with the things that I said on the record to make me appear more, you know, knowledgeable than I am. So with that, you want to approve these both as amended?
Yeah.
Okay. I move to approve the October 26, 27, 2022 minutes as amended with some minor clerical changes, and November 16th, 2022 minutes with clerical changes as well.
Okay. With all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any objections? Okay, and we'll move on. Now we're on to consent calendar, item 5 on our agenda. There are now 4 items on consent, 2 of which were approved by the Operations and Governance Committee and 2 of which weren't reviewed by any committee. I'm just making notes as I change my script. As a reminder to the public, after board discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in person to be called on in Zoom to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. So we'll start. Shelley, may we have a report from Operations and Governance Committee?
Sure. It was a relatively short meeting, but eventful. We had a report from our finance director, and consistent with prior months, planning fees are still very high. We are now 14% above the 3-year average, which is good news. Expenses are still within budget, and cash flow will be negative due to disbursements of mitigation funds to the CTC. And as we'll discuss in the next consent calendar item, the approval of the release of funds to the Nevada Division of State Lands. With respect to item number 2, the committee unanimously decided, based on a report given to us by State Lands, to disperse the $2,605,730 requested.
Thank you, Shelley. Do any members of the board have any questions or comments on those 2 items? Okay. And then on the other 2 consent calendar items, are there any questions or comments from the board on those 2 items?
I just have one comment. I know that Stuart Yont, who used to be a member of this board, who served as a presidential appointee, has been wanting a doc for eons. So congratulations, Stuart.
And just for the record, I'll read in what those items are. Again, the 2 items that were not heard by any committee, the Yount New Multiple Parcel Multiple Use Pier and the Annual Local Government Coordination Report and Action on Recertification of the City of South Lake Tahoe's El Dorado County's and Placer County's Permit Delegation Memoranda of Understanding. And so those are in the board packet. Okay. So if there's no other comments on those items, we'll go to the public. No other board member comment. Is there any public on those four items that we just talked about?
Madam Chair, there are no hands raised in Zoom to comment on this item.
Okay, then we'll close the public comment, and I entertain a motion to approve those items on the consent calendar.
Madam Chair, I'll move approval of items 1 through 4 on the consent calendar.
Okay, we have a motion. If there's no other discussion, Maria, will you call the roll?
Ms. Saldin.
Yes.
Ms. Conrad Seda?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Ms. Diss?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Honigman?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Mr. Rice? Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Madam Chair, the motion passes.
Thank you, Maria. And now we'll return to consent calendar item number 5, Latitude 39, mixed-use residential and commercial project, 110 Lake Parkway, Douglas County, Nevada, assessor's parcel number 1318-27-001-010, TRPA file number ERSP2022-0119. The staff report on this item can be found on page 331 of your packet. And as a reminder to the public, after the board discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in person to be called on or in Zoom to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. So, Julie, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate that. Julie Reagan, for the record. Noteworthy that my first governing board meeting as executive director coincides with 12-12-12 week on Monday was our 10-year anniversary milestone of the regional plan, as was mentioned earlier. And this truly is an inflection point in our history of the agency. And as I will note later, we've made great progress, but we still have many challenges in front of us. And I think this project really illustrates some of them, as you will hear in the presentation. I think it is, as we said earlier at the RPIC meeting, it's time for TRPA to really take a hard look at our land use policies. And that was very important to me in being motivated to pursue this job. And looking forward at the next 50 years, how can we adjust our land use policies to incentivize the type of projects that we want to see? We have heard in the last week that there are concerns about this particular project, Latitude 39, and there are also supporters of this project, as you will hear. Our staff is prepared to answer questions that you might have on traffic, vehicle miles traveled, and other matters. And I will say we had this item on consent because the project is roughly the same size in units as a project in Incline Village recently approved on consent, and John Hester will get into more detail of that. And the project also advances several regional plan policies promoting infill, redevelopment in a town center, in a walkable, bikeable area. But it's also an example of how a project can meet TRPA standards, but not necessarily advance all of the goals of the regional plan, such as affordable housing. I'd like to ask John Hester to jump in and tee this up, introduce the item, and then also the project's representative, Lou Feldman, is in the audience and has a few words. Then, Madam Chair, we are prepared to answer all the board's questions on this and have your discussion further. So thank you.
Thank you, Julie. I just want to spend a little time putting this in some context, regional plan context, and that's why I asked Tracy to show the slide here. I was trying to remember who was here when we adopted the regional plan update in 2012. Shelley, I know, was. Jim, I think, was around but wasn't on the governing board. On your way. And I don't believe anybody else was, so others may have been lurking in the shadows, but I don't think anybody else was on the governing board. Seriously, I think it's important for you all to get a little context before I turn it over to Allie. But essentially what both the regional plan and the regional transportation plan / sustainable community strategy looks to do is both protect the environment and do successful redevelopment by integrating environmental factors, land use factors, and transportation factors. So this is a slide out of our orientation program for all new employees. And so some of you are new since 2012, all of you except Shelley. So I'll give you the spiel that goes with this slide. The slide on the left shows the sensitive lands where in the regional plan we want to move development from. Most of them are sensitive areas spread out around the basin. The slide in the middle shows where we would like that development to move to become redevelopment or have redevelopment. Okay. You've already heard this, Shelley. You heard it. You may not remember it, but you heard it. And what the middle slide shows is we have one high-density tourist district, which happens to be where this project Latitude 39 is. We have one regional center and a number of town centers. And we, by shorthand, say we want to see development in town centers, but it includes the regional center and the high-density tourist center. So those are areas where we'd like to move sensitive development or development that's spread out more concentrated into those areas. And there are a number of policies in the land use section of the regional plan, starting basically in 4.8 through 4.10 or 11. But like Julie said, they call for mixed use, higher density, walkable, bikeable, transit serve, shared parking. And our transportation system, shown on the map on the right, is designed to work with that land use pattern to make it happen. So what we've got basically in our regional plan at the regional level is a redefinition of the development footprint to work with the transportation system into these centers. So with that said, one of the points we thought was important to let you know is we typically, when we have a project that comes in that implements the plan, the policies, and the code, we as staff by default will put it on the consent agenda. Because I think like Vince said this morning in RPIC, you don't want to put any more hoops in front of somebody if they're doing what you want in your plans. You want to make it, you want to actually incentivize that. Now, that doesn't mean I'm criticizing anybody for pulling it off of consent. There obviously can be reasons that you want to do that in more detail, but I want to give you this context, not just for this project, but anytime in the future we look at a project that's coming in that seems to be implementing our policies and code, we're going to put it on the consent agenda just because we think we've got somebody trying to do what our plans say we want. So with that, I'll stop and turn it over to, is it Allie or John? Oh, is it Lou? Lou? Okay.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Governing Board members. Lou Feldman on behalf of the project applicant, and I want to kind of follow up a little bit on what John Hester just mentioned. 2011 was a pretty contentious time. We had some legislation where Nevada was threatening to withdraw from the compact, and a bi-state consultation committee was formed that I had the privilege to serve on, and we in 2012 brought forward the regional plan update. And the cornerstone of the regional plan update, or at least a couple of them, were a shift in the direction of the agency, where we recognized the basin was fundamentally built out and that environmental redevelopment was really the focus to be pursued, as opposed to the historic, you know, pardon the expression, but growth control plan on steroids. So it was a seismic shift, I think, in the direction of the agency. And the other thing that was a cornerstone of the RPU was the idea of trying to create some certainty and predictability in the process. And so that's what both states wanted to see happen. And the RPU was adopted. And kind of simultaneously with that, there was a South Shore Vision Plan. Some of you may recollect if you were lurking in the shadows or elsewhere. And the South Shore Vision Plan included, amongst others, TRPA, the South Tahoe Alliance of Resorts, Douglas County, the city of South Lake Tahoe, and we tried to imagine what the core should look like, the tourist core, really between Ski Run on the California side and where now Lakeside undergoing demolition on the north side. So that South Shore Vision Plan also contemplated many of the elements that were incorporated in the first area plan adopted pursuant to the RPU. The vision plan identified the high density tourist district, the casino core, and Douglas County was the first county to adopt an area plan. And that area plan included, amongst other things, the design criteria for 95 feet of height at latitude 39. So, as with that backdrop in mind, the developer of Latitude 39 embraced the rules. And, I forgot one other historical component. We also convened TRPA, a stakeholder group, to talk about VMT and shift the idea of the original 1982 threshold of maximum vehicle miles traveled to this impact assessment statement. And I was also fortunate to participate in that and support that. And that became part of the criteria under which we process a project. And so this project was processed with that in mind and has complied with all of the design criteria, the area plan criteria, certainly consistent with the RPU. And what is not in the permit and was not in your packet, the project also is a really, kind of leader in sustainability and conservation. The developer, PCS Energy, is an energy conservation company. And among the items incorporated from a sustainability perspective are all parking will have electric chargers, solar is utilized in connection with not only capturing, but also storing electricity, also harvesting electricity at down periods so that with batteries, the use of electricity is minimized. It's a vehicle to grid electric charging system, ground forced heat pumps, exhaust air energy recovery, and is really a model for, contemporary responsible development. So with these green practices, compliance with all the rules and policies, we are pleased to bring forward and pleased to, sadly pleased to pay the $106,000 mobility mitigation fee, among other fees. And finally, what was not in the permit, as some of you may know, I have been enthusiastic and wearing another hat, raising money for microtransit. And we were successful in connection with the Event Center project in launching microtransit 1 year ahead of schedule, and in some respects, 6 years before we were required to have year-round microtransit. So that's off to a really robust start. And why is that relevant to this project? Well, as I was engaged in the fundraising process, the developer of this project supports those kinds of mitigation measures and has agreed to pay $10,000 a year, not because anybody here has asked them, but that was just, part of what they thought was the right thing to do. So they're in to support microtransit, again, as a responsible member of this community, and I think supporting a very important and now successful addition to our mobility. With that, I'd be pleased to answer any questions and want to thank Allie and others on the transportation staff. I do have available one of our architects is here in the room. I also have, I hope on Zoom, Gordon Shaw from LSC Transportation Consultants, if you need to have any questions answered concerning any of the VMT analysis. I think that concludes my spontaneous remarks.
Thank you, Lou. And I'll then open it up for board member questions. And it sounds like we have the entire consulting team as well as our staff to ask questions of. So we'll start with any governing board member questions.
And Madam Chair, I will just introduce Allie Borowski from our permitting and compliance team, and she is at the ready to answer questions as well. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Okay, board members. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Ashley.
Thanks so much for the presentation. So it's great to hear that the developer is investing in microtransit and has embraced a bunch of net zero type gains for the building. How is the developer encouraging the use of the microtransit from the residents? Are there incentives, sticks, you know, to make sure that it's actually used? Are there limits on parking in order to encourage that? What's the relationship with the development and the actual use of microtransit and avoidance of car travel?
Yeah, so to first state the obvious, the project is located within walking distance, of course, of the casinos, Heavenly Village, Edgewood, the beach. So it is about as, conveniently located to encourage pedestrian mobility. I'll be honest with you. I don't expect that there will be high utilization from this bed base for microtransit because it doesn't go to the places where these folks want to go. They can walk there, to be honest with you.
So they'll have beach access with this building?
Yeah, there's a public easement to the beach at Edgewood, so they can walk to the beach.
And can we talk a little bit about why affordable housing or worker housing wasn't contemplated in the development?
There is no requirement from either Douglas County or TRPA to have inclusive housing, so that is not part of the program.
Okay, but there was no requirement for microtransit, additions, as you said, not for 6 years, and there was no requirement for those net zero targets. So why not include some worker housing or contemplate it at least, or feed into a fund to do that?
That was a decision by the development team. While they are certainly, as we all are, I think, supportive of affordable housing, I have had the experience of working on several affordable housing projects, including the one across Market Street here. And generally speaking, in order to make those financially viable, there needs to be a very substantial public subsidy. Douglas County does not have a housing person to work with to advance that cause, and so it is not part of the program. But I appreciate the question and certainly support the aspirational goal.
And I do think we'll have a discussion on VMT. I'm not sure if I'm the one who should tee that up. Jim, if you want to ask your questions first, we can come back to that. The VMT analysis was really what made me most alarmed, right? It seemed like the way it was done, and I mean, this is for Allie too, and I did have a chance to talk to John about it. It just skating in just too below the level for broader assessment felt very suspect, I'll just be honest. And so that was really what made me take broader notice and dig further into the VMT assessment. And I did find a number of areas where it seemed like there needed to be more work done. And you'll note that there are a number of public comments to this effect too. So I'm just wondering, based on those public comments and based on the comments that are coming in for board members, what's the plan to consider the VMT assessment? Or reconsidered, I should say.
Well, perhaps I should defer that to staff. I would tell you this, that having participated in the formulation of the impact assessment, the idea was to create some certainty on how we're going to conduct ourselves. And in fact, the opportunity when we were over the limit to embrace the mitigation measures that were part of the menu were embraced. That brought us below the limit. There's no gamesmanship here. And, the other thing I would say to you, which is something perhaps the transportation folks can embellish beyond my skill set, but the assumption was 100% occupancy of these units in terms of calculating the VMT. We all know that that's never going to happen. So there was a significant overstatement of the actual VMT, but, we're playing conservatively. So I think, to suggest that because we're within two is, I respect your being suspect. But again, I think that given the conservative nature of the calculation, it's really, we're probably well under that. And availing ourselves of the menu, we shouldn't be penalized because we're actually invoking mitigation that has been proposed by the code.
Well, and maybe staff can talk about just the subtraction of the existing uses from the formula and just how that was completed and when that assessment was done and when the traffic analysis was done.
I'll have a seat and listen with.
I'm going to start generally, Ashley, and then Bridget can maybe follow in with more specifics. And I think Bill had the same question that we talked about. And that is, generally, TRPA recognizes existing development. And so that can be grandfathered in or utilized on site. We do it for coverage, you do it for height, generally things like that, density, et cetera. And when you come to a change of use, which is what this situation is, right? There was a bank, and now you're changing that bank to another use, mixed use, residential and a restaurant. The applicant or the owner of the existing development can take advantage of that existing impact associated with the operation of the development as part of what they get to claim as credit for their development or redevelopment in this case. But for changes in use and for VMT and for trips, you need to be operating, I believe it's 90 days within the last 5 years. And that's our rule that says, if you can show that, then you can take credit for that amount of use. In this case, it was a bank, but the bank generally closed before the 5 year period, but they kept the drive-through ATM open. So the consultant and TRPA staff negotiated what would be an appropriate rate, you know, decided that the best way to do that is that using the ITE International Traffic Engineers. It's close. The ITE rate for a drive-through for a bank, a drive-through lane, which is, you know, a reasonable assumption to make. The original traffic report took credit for the entire bank. And so it showed a much higher level of existing use on the property. And so when that original traffic analysis with that assumption went in, it showed a net decrease in VMT because of that credit. But that when that was submitted to staff said, no, the bank hasn't been operating within the last 90 days, within the last 5 years. The only thing that has been doing that is the drive-through. And so we arranged a credit for the drive-through. Now, staff can give you a more intimate blow-by-blow on what the actual numbers are for that, but that's what they were then able to use as credit to reduce or subtract from the amount of VMT generated by the 40 units plus the restaurant, the mixed-use project. Would you want more detail, or is that sufficient?
I mean, I heard all of that. I read all of it. It still feels like there's a miss there. So, we should take more comments. In part because that the amount of use of the ATM, it just feels like the formula itself, when I looked at it based on some of the comments and formulas I saw yesterday, it still didn't quite capture the dramatic change in use with the number of bedrooms for these types of units for, you know, turning them over more regularly on a weekend. So it still felt flawed to me, even with that explanation.
Well, when you get a report that basically says a drive-through, and I'm speaking in rough terms, bank generates the same amount of VMT as the 40 residential units, it makes you stop and think. But we go back and you check, you know, are we using the right ITE category? Are we using reasonable assumptions for those units? And it worked out. Now, what's really driving the extra or the additional VMT associated with this project is the restaurant. So that's what essentially is being you know, is generating the trips over above the drive-through that gets us close to 1,300.
Okay, I'll go to Jim. I think you were first, and then John.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, my questions were a little bit in line with what Ashley was saying. It does jump out. I mean, it's, you know, rightly or wrongly, when you read a report that says, okay, here's your threshold, it's 1,300 daily vehicle trips, and this generates 1,298 or whatever, it got my curiosity up for sure. And I did dig into it a little bit, and I wasn't on the VMT working group, but, you know, certainly did follow along and really appreciate the work that committee did. You know, I was reminded that, you know, that threshold there is for a reason. It's to make sure that it's being adequately mitigated when it fits above the threshold, but it's also an incentive to get folks that are doing projects to do the types of transportation improvements and get credit for it in order to bring below the threshold. And one of the examples, and I was just going to ask if there were other examples as well, when I read through the staff report, with the restaurant, there is going to be a employee trip reduction program. I mean, those are the types of things that we want to incentivize and have folks do as part of, you know, doing work in the basin. So, you know, that being said, I was looking for a little bit more information on the analysis and what mitigation measures, and maybe it was just the trip reduction employee program, but what other incentives were done in order to bring the count below the 1,300 daily vehicle trips?
Can I go ahead and address part of that now? Yeah, and I don't know if I have your exact answer, but for the record, Bridget Cornell, and I'm also with the Permitting and Compliance Department. And like has been described here, we have been working with this applicant for at least 6 months, maybe the better part of a year now, regarding the traffic-related impacts related to this project. And as John mentioned, the initial analysis had some input in it that we did not agree with. And so we have been working with them to kind of not just tweak these rates, but to come up with what we feel are the reasonable trip generation rates for these particular land uses. Like John Marshall mentioned, we adjusted the one for the bank instead of applying it to 13,000 square feet of the bank. We agreed the only thing that's been operating is one drive-in lane, and we came up with the best information that we had. In the transportation planning and transportation engineering industry, the accepted sources of data for an analysis like this is the Institute of Transportation Engineers Trip Generation Manual. And, you know, every few years, I think there are now 11 editions of them. And every few years, they're gathering data nationwide. They give you as much information as they have about the data regarding all these land uses. And we worked with the applicant to come up with what we felt were the best categories within the ITE Trip Generation Manual for this project. The whole issue of it, the 1,298 compared to the 1,300, we have been working with them, like has been mentioned here. They could go to a higher number of residential units. They could go to more commercial floor area. You know, that it's the project has kind of been, not just the project itself, but there have been some things incorporated that have reduced it down to that number. Again, from the just broad project end, they've come up with the number that gets you around those, you know, around the 1,300 VMT for screening. But then there have been some other things that are incorporated into it. And even though the applicant is now agreeing to this donation to Microtransit, the Microtransit, I do not believe, is something that went into that. But we are taking into account, or they, you know, and again, these are, if I want to clarify one point too, is when the transportation engineer is going through these analyses, we are agreeing on input kind of as we go along. We don't look at what the end result will be before we agree on what the appropriate input is. So we agreed on the input, and this happens to be the number, how it came out. 1,300 is the screening number, or as I referred to it yesterday, threshold with a lowercase t. It is not a, you know, a threshold as we all think of it, but it is kind of that threshold for what screens and what does not. So the applicant worked and incorporated some measures to get it to this point. I guess I'm not super familiar with every mitigation measure that is being incorporated into it, but in a mixed use project, you take into account trips that are actually being or remaining on site, trips that would otherwise be made off site and be adding additional trips and adding BMT, now can remain on site, now can be pedestrian trips, can be transit trips and things like that. So a lot of credit has been given for things like that to reach this number.
Jim, also just specifically, if you look at page 345 of your packet, condition J has the elements of the commute. I want to get the commute trip reduction program, very important to the transportation people to get it right. And so it has some samples in there of what they can incorporate in their trip reduction program, but essentially they need to show at least 20 VMT reduction. And that's what gets them under, basically that gets them under the 1300.
If I could real quick, thanks Madam Chair. I really appreciate the explanation, Bridget and John. It's, you know, right or wrong, it jumps out, you know, when you're reading something like this. But, you know, the more cynical part of my nature can jump to a place like, oh, well, the traffic analysis was formed in order to be below 1300. You know, I think as I dove into this and with the responses going back here, I get a lot more comfortable where no, the traffic analysis wasn't done to get below $1,300, or 1,300 trips. The project working with staff was designed and mitigated in order to bring it down. And so sometimes I feel like the more cynical parts of us can jump to a more nefarious thing. But, you know, knowing what I know from the BMT history and from the project and just even back to 2011 with the desire to have some certainty, you know, when people come through the process, you know, I am comfortable that staff has been working, at least in the space of the traffic analysis, to come up with a project that is under the threshold as opposed to coming up with a traffic analysis to come up with a specific answer. So thank you.
Thank you, Jim. John?
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. I share some kind of quick concerns about the assumptions on the miles associated with ATM machines. It's hard to imagine those being equivalent to residential travel. But another baseline question I have is what the assumption on BMT per employee. I notice, you know, we have restaurant and bar, we have theater, kids zone, lobby, classroom, offices, outdoor spaces. So I'm thinking of landscapers, housekeepers, restaurant workers, maintenance, how, you know, on and on. So what is the number of employees expected? We just heard that there's not housing provided. So if it follows trends in the basin, we can anticipate they're living out of the basin, commuting from Carson, Minden, Gardnerville, what have you. So what is the number of employees that are assumed, and what is the average, what is the BMT per employee that is baked into the BMT model?
Bridget Cornell again. This a point similar to this has been raised a couple of times, and that in the surveys and the data that goes into the if I could just now shorten it to ITE trip generation manual, there, when the data is gathered, the data is then processed in a manner where they can come up with or calculate the number of daily vehicle trip-ins associated with fill in the blank unit. For typically what we use when a project is being proposed and evaluated is the known factor for us in evaluating a project generally is the size of the space and the project, or in the case of a residential, you know, the residential side, it's the number of units. For a commercial space, it's the square footage of the space. So for the most part, when we recommend or apply trip generation rates, those trip generation rates are based on the size of the, in this case, a restaurant. So it's based on an eating establishment. So the ITE rates are kind of boiled down to a unit of per 1,000 square feet of gross floor area. In that rate, the employee trips are presumed to be a part of that. When you apply these trip generation rates, you don't apply the rates for space and the rates for employee. I know that I presume that for a restaurant trip generation rate, you could look for the rate based on the number of employees, but it's just a different way of applying, you know, it's a different way of getting to the same result or the same product, if you will. But it's just that now instead of saying 3,300 or however many square feet of restaurant there is in this project, we would be saying, oh, they're going to have 10 employees and it's going to be a different trip generation rate. So the, you know, when they do these surveys, they're just counting the number of cars coming and going to whatever the use is. And then in this case, they would be dividing it by the square footage of the use itself. So in the trip rate that we have applied or that has been applied for this project, we don't separate the employee trips from the customer trips.
And also there's not an attempt to analyze how far they're traveling. And again, to say it doesn't matter whether we know that there's really very, you know, diminishing supply of workforce housing, there's none added to this project, we can assume that, you know, a significant percentage will be traveling 25, 30, 30, 40 miles to these jobs. That's not contemplated in the VMT calculation.
So in a general sense, it is definitely taken into account. When a traffic model is developed in the Tahoe region, geographically, it's broken down into zones, and I'm not going to know the exact number of zones anymore because I was involved with the model a long time ago. But for each different zone, it used to be called the traffic analysis zone. I'm not sure exactly how we refer to it now, but for every zone, you look at the number of trips that would be generated within that zone. And then for those trips that are generated within that zone, those trips have an average trip length. So there is an average trip length that is applied in the calculation of VMT. In this case, I believe we use an average for the zone. So, you know, in your question of, are we taking into account an employee who has to drive 30 miles to get to work? We're not going in and serving every specific person and applying a particular length of their commute to individual employees. But again, we are applying averages. And that is kind of the professionally accepted methodology for these types of calculations.
Is there an estimate on the number of employees that will be working at the facility once it's constructed? I know that construction jobs are another thing outside of a VMT analysis, but just ongoing service workers.
I want to go back just a second, because I think Bridget explained it well. That's ITE manual and those things. But the Commute Tahoe program, that's the commuter program John spoke of. And in this requirement, will actually be, they have agreed to provide a survey, an annual survey, and they're going to be asking their employees, how far, where do you live? And that's the whole point of this program, is to get better information, like you're saying. Now, that doesn't mean that's upfront and included in this analysis. That's not something that exists today, but that is where the future is going with the program and a better understanding to help them then even consider an employee shuttle from Minden or what have you. So a part of the agreement and being a part of that program in Commute Tahoe is getting to that data. That's all I wanted to add. I think Bridget's doing just right. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, John, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, just noted that the shuttle was been used as to offset VMT to get it below that screen threshold. So it just seems like we're not starting from a baseline of something to subtract from. And I guess on a similar, do we have any data on similar commuter reduction programs at state line at the casinos or hotels that would give us a basis to analyze expected reduction from similar programs? I mean, actual real world data.
And this is Michelle Glickert from Transportation.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Yeah. Michelle Glickert for the record. We don't currently, and that is what we're undertaking right now with the South Shore TMA and working with them closely so that we can do that survey work and get a better understanding. All of that information then can feed back into our modeling efforts, our transportation planning efforts. So currently, you know, it's not in our hands for us to be using, but that is what we're working towards. So requirements like this to have them be a part of that program helps to build that database.
Another question is, I think there were 119 proposed parking spaces, if I read the document correctly. There are 40 units. So are the rest for patrons of the restaurant and some number for employees? Just curious how that's anticipated.
Yeah, Ali Borowski, kind of for this project, along with Bridget, who helped me extensively with the transportation analysis. Yeah, so the 119 spaces were both for the condo homeowners and also people who will be working at the facility. So the restaurant staff, and let me just pull that up. But yeah, essentially meet the needs of the facility.
Another, I guess, another traffic question is, I noted that it's anticipated there'll be a two-step subdivision to make the units condos, which presumably could be utilized as vacation rentals, right? And so, or does the traffic analysis contemplate what the VMT would be in that scenario if there are eight people, say, per unit visiting with four cars each?
So regarding short-term rental, well, let me provide a little background on this. The trip generation rate, the ITE trip generation rate that was used, I think we ended up with mid-rise multifamily residential, but the ITE trip generation rate does not decipher between an apartment or a condominium, which would apply ownership or renting. So the same from an ITE perspective or from an analysis perspective, the same trip generation rate would apply whether it was owned or rented. So that distinction is not necessarily made in this analysis. And really there's, even in the ITE trip generation manual in general, there is not a separate trip generation rate for a short-term rental.
Yeah, that's interesting, because it's not hard to imagine a family of four or five having one or two cars for the family versus four bedrooms, each attracting a couple, each come in their own car, each of which travels the West Shore to go to the beaches, and et cetera. So it seems like a bit of a flaw in the system. All right.
Okay, John. Shelley next, I believe. And anyone else? Or Bill?
It is my last meeting, and this is very difficult for me because I don't like to be critical of staff, and I appreciate what they've said. So first of all, to John Hester's response to this having been put on consent, there's real value here in the discussion that's going on around how you guys come up with the VMT issue. I struggled for 18 months with staff to come up with a new VMT threshold. And I feel really, I feel like many of the former legislators that I used to work with, when they just simply looked at a piece of legislation that the Coastal Commission was implementing and said, I really didn't think we were going to do that, Bill. I think it's really useful because, you know, a lot of what you guys do is behind the green curtain. And you seem to be afraid to just kind of put it out here for us to kind of have a full debate about, do we agree or disagree with what you did? And that's really not fair. I mean, all I do is parachute in here once a month, have to make a decision. You know, if it isn't for the fact that I spend a lot of time with the league and others to try to find out what's going on, you know, and also when I was chair, you know, I was allowed inside the green curtain. And so you guys would then talk to me like, hey, Bill, we're thinking about putting up a project that's going to be 9 stories high with all of these amenities here. And it's going to be, it fits all these things. But what do you think? I really missed that when I left being chair, because now I don't hear from you guys. So, yeah, I was stunned at the agenda review. So I was immediately excited to start diving into this. And like my other colleagues, just the numbers was like a little weird. And then I started asking questions, sent John some stuff. And the one thing that really bugs me when Marshall responds to some of my stuff is say, this is the way we always did it. Well, wait a minute. We just did a VMT overhaul, because the way we have been doing it
isn't working. And we're hearing about it from places like Fodor that, you know, people are sick of the people that are coming here in their cars, creating the traffic. And one of the reasons we dealt with having the VMT threshold and a way to assess that issue to help implement our regional plan was to reduce VMT. So I see a project, it's 9 stories high, but it's in the casino core. I get it. It's not in the middle of Kings Beach. I mean, it's big, but it doesn't strike me as that. But I started thinking about mid-rise residential. I see those a lot in Sacramento. And when you think about walkable and all this kind of stuff, it's so different than what Tahoe has. And to a certain extent, guys, I just think you're kind of lost in the numbers and not seeing the big picture here. But this is a big project. And so as I go through the numbers here and just kind of bear with me, is that when I just deal with the way you guys handled this thing, you go, there are 40 units. Of course, this is the first time it says proposed condos. For all the rest of the thing, we're talking about mid-rise residential. And you say that ITE doesn't make any distinction. So I accept that because I look back through how we do all this stuff. And so 40 times 4.9, then times 2.3. But for 490, I have a footnote here that refers me back to the TRPA data for the PIA zone 43, which we worked out through our analysis for what's required. So that's where we come up with the 4.9 for that. But where did you come up with 2.3? For a project that has 4 floors, in which every floor has 6 4-bedroom units and 3 and 4 3-bedroom units. Those are fairly large.
I'm sorry. So what is the
2.3 per household come from? Because there's not a footnote to direct me where you came up with that number. Whereas 4.9, I get we have some backup for why it either came out of ITE or somewhere else, but where did 2.3 come from?
Oh, so you're saying it says 2.3 people per household?
No, it's on table 10 of their traffic analysis.
But that unit that you're referring to, does it say people per household or what?
Persons per household.
Persons per household.
Right.
Michelle, I don't know if we have a
Manager, may I suggest if we could look that up, and then if you have other questions, Bill, we can pause and keep going.
Well, it does affect the reason because I just wonder why you couldn't say 2.5, or why you couldn't say 3, or why you couldn't say 4 when you consider the number of bedrooms.
Okay.
It also is really my own experience, having done this myself, rented a 3-bedroom place in Jackson Hole when I was there. And I filled it up. I filled it up with me. I had an ex-wife there. I had my old roommate.
TMI.
I had my former partners. We filled those bedrooms up. And we drove a lot different than we were if we were a resident. We were visitors. There's a difference. And we're having a problem with all of the visitors that are coming in here. And they should be making a contribution towards helping us come up with a transportation system to reduce the impact of vehicle miles traveled. So, yes, I have a question about that. And then when you multiply all that out, you come up with 450. But what you really come up with is 450.8. And we rounded up all the others, but we didn't round that one. So, really, we're not 2 under. When you start adding things up, we're only 1 under.
Madam Chair, I'm so sorry, Bill. If I may, I have an overarching suggestion because these are really good questions. I don't know that we're going to get an answer to these all today if we're doing math on the fly. Might I suggest we defer this item for a month? I don't know what that does.
I think that's what I would love to see, to have someone go back and really go through these numbers so they can come back and give you guys an answer. Because first of all, I didn't have this in my packet. I had to get it.
Mm-hmm. And I keep, I'm just thinking this might be something we want.
Haley, I think you're right on.
I just throw that out there.
And then I would just ask staff or the applicant.
What that does.
Yeah, what that does, implications also, so that we hear both sides, because we see the implications of not having adequate information here. Sure. For the board today. Yeah.
We can let the applicant address that. He also has mentioned to me that the traffic consultant is on Zoom. So if we would like to have some of these very specific questions answered, he could likely address
those. Okay, great. Thank you. Lou, you want to...
Bridget said it perfectly. I would hope that we could have the benefit of the traffic consultant's input before we start talking about some departure from concluding this today.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So let's keep that on track. Let's get all the questions out. Are there other questions? And then we will try to let staff and the engineer out, answer all the questions at one time. I think it is probably that'd the best be approach. Okay.
All right.
And but somebody's I was taking
hoping,
all kinds
I
of
I was hoping it. that Gordon would be able to fill in some of the things that aren't really real clear on this. But I do have problems with the sense that the size of this project with six four-bedroom units and four three-bedroom units on four floors, and you only count it as 2.3 persons per household. That could, because I just don't know. Everywhere else it comes off with the difference. And I understand why we eliminate existing VMT. John, I do appreciate you sending that to me. It made me think about it. I don't like the 5 years. I think that's a little over the top. I wish you should revisit that. But I do, it does make sense that if you're going to do redevelopment and there is an existing project with a certain VMT, and you're going to take that and add to this that existing VMT you shouldn't pay for it twice. So, but initially I thought, God, this was weird to remove from the project Wells Fargo's VMT. And I appreciate also what staff did as far as when they first came in and tried to get a deal on the whole bank. And you guys said, no, what you really have is a drive-in of one lane. And I don't know how much that's used really, but, that's fine. But as you go through this, I also just question where you came up with the number 20, which we're subtracting from, because I don't know the number of employees that are going to be. I mean, there's nothing in the staff report that suggests how many people are going to work in this restaurant or how many people are going to be necessary for the outfitters and all the other unique amenities here. That I have to admit make me think that this is something I saw in Jackson Hole and we see all around here all the time, which is a major vacation home rental project. But anyway, where did the 20 come from? And then how would you enforce it? Because all you'd have to do is just simply change that household number to 3. Or even 2.5, and I think you're over 1,300. And if you just, you know, worked with the consultant and everybody else about, yeah, we like your idea of the of this. I don't know what you guys called it, didn't call it, whatever you called it, but in this thing, to a target of 20, and here's how you're going to do it. And then you guys sign off of it as a mitigation measure or something that you can enforce rather than being buried in the project. And years from now, are you really going to follow up with the project? You may follow up with mitigation measures, yes. So anyway, I appreciate all that you did, but I think this kind of stuff is essential that we have more of this stuff before this board as to how we do stuff like this, because traffic, you know, visitor impacts is a big deal to people. They're really upset. And people are angry at us as if we're not doing stuff. And what I hated to read in an email was, oh God, here they go again, approving a big project and we're putting it on consent. And that was kind of my reaction. Oh, we should not be putting this on consent. Because we need to have this kind of discussion. And then I like the way that Jim said it. I kind of felt kind of cynical about this whole thing, but I appreciate what all your discussion, and now I have a better idea of how you guys go about it. Even though I was so involved in this threshold, I did not spend a whole lot of time, and maybe I was just asleep at the switch, and maybe one of the reasons I'm leaving is that the project impact assessment guidelines, I don't know, passed by the governing board. I mean, I would have said at the time, looking at that existing thing, I think I would say 5 years. I'm not so sure that's a great idea, but I understand the principle of waiting 5 years and just having that hang out there. No, I would have had a problem with that. But, you know, it was the hard work of working with you guys and getting it all together that we got a VMT threshold that made sense. And hopefully, if implemented and enforced, will reduce VMT and reduce the impact that visitors are having if we get a more improved transportation system. That's my problem with this project and the way it was presented.
Okay, and so Bill has put some questions on. I would suggest that we keep getting all the questions out, then have the staff and consultants respond to those, and then maybe we can continue on with our comments as it relates to the answers to those questions. Does that make sense to the governing board members? I don't want to mute. I think getting every question on the record now is important in giving people the opportunity to respond at one time versus back and forth. I'm seeing nods. Is that okay? Okay. That's how we tend to do it at the Board of Soups, but I want to make sure I get through that. So Shelley was next, and then Vince.
Vince, you have a question.
Okay.
Yeah, I had a quick comment with related question. You know, I think most of us would have liked to have seen a different project here, but this project is the result of our codes. When you have our codes, this is what you end up with, and so we can't fault the developer. And what I'm trying to understand is this the way, the formula that we put out to the world to calculate VMT, how it works, and you get results that don't seem intuitive, but they're the rules. And if they're the rules, we can't fault, you know, the consultants or the developer. Like, we look at a 4-bedroom unit and say, that's going to have 8 people in it. That's going to be 4 couples, or it's going to be 2 families with 2 kids each. You know, like, we've all done it. We've all been on those trips. But if the rule is you assume a unit has 2.3 people and that's how you do the estimation and it's independent of bedrooms, then I think that, you know, I'd like to know that, how those rules come up or what is open to interpretation based on the design of the project. Because, you know, Once you've lost the football game, you can't complain about the rules, you know, of it. You got to put the rules out there, and then people play the game, and you go, oh, maybe we should change that rule, you know, eventually. And I think we'll find that we probably want to change some rules. And, you know, one of them I was thinking about was it is possible for condos with HOAs to say, I mean, most of the buildings we build, we say no short-term rentals. And that's a very different that would give you a very different VMT. So I think, you know, our codes might need to be enhanced to react to things like that we could build in that would give people more confidence in what we're doing and help us more closely estimate what's actually going to happen once it's built. So going forward. So I'd like when the transportation engineer talks to us to kind of tell us what are the assumptions that are built in to these formulas that they make, and then what's kind of project specific to see if those align with the reality of this project for me to understand it. Thanks.
Thank you, Vince. Other questions? Yes, Jessica.
I just had a few questions. And again, these can be compiled with all the questions and answered later, even if they are easy to answer right away. It was along the lines of the parking and the what Vince just mentioned about HOAs, because, you know, I have familiarity with projects that sound sort of similar to this, at least in other parts of the country, like Bill said, in Jackson Hole. My joke is that it's my family are the bad guys in the show Yellowstone, because we go to a place in Montana that's like the plot line from Yellowstone, the outsiders coming in. But there are mechanisms that are used to that facility. That example of a facility is now one that is only owners can access all of the amenities. So it essentially de facto ended short-term rentals because none of the renters can use any of the amenities. And so my question was, this says, you know, the amenities are for owners, and I didn't know if there's any plan to sort of write it into the HOA rules or something like that, that only the owners use these amenities so that we don't end up with a bunch of STRs. And then my other question was about the parking. Is there a assigned number of spaces per unit? We have 119 total, but there's 40 units. Yeah, if you have 8 people, that might bring 4 cars, but if they don't have a place to park 4 cars, they're not going to bring 4 cars. So that was the question.
Okay. Good.
I think I have more, but if I...
Thank you. Are there any other questions here? Yes.
Yeah, so, I'll start off with a comment, and that is, when we start talking about area plans in the South Shore or North Shore, wherever, we put in there a balance. Short-term rentals are not evil people. I go out and I rent. I look for that. It's a part of our reality and our world. Whole idea of bringing in area plans was to bring in development to density to allow for things such as short-term rental in these areas that have the walkable, bikeable areas. So to talk about taking them out, to me, makes no sense. It's exactly why we have this here. Is that realization is we are going to have this. We do need more density. We need to get them out of the cars. But this is something that's a long-term issue. This is not developers' issue at this point right now. So we need to understand that, number one. And secondly, we need to understand if we need to change that, we can do that. We've done this in local jurisdictions. My local jurisdiction has a 2 beds per head requirement. That means for a 4-bedroom, you've got eight people that can stay there. Yes, so make that the reality when we're talking about data and put that in and make sure we understand that short-term rentals are here, and whether we like them or not, they're probably going to stay. So we need to, number one, understand that, but then secondly, be able to do an analysis that gets us there. Be real about what that is going to be used for, because I do understand that that is an issue here. But again, I don't think it's developer. I think we need to talk about how to move forward with understanding short-term rentals and how to balance that out in our, especially in our denser areas. Thank you.
Okay, back to Jessica for another question. I have one too, and then I want to get to our online board members too, because I'm sure Wes or others might have questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to quickly say, I very much agree with you, Sue. I didn't mean to imply I'm anti-short-term rental. What I actually think that short-term rentals in densely populated areas are more desirable than having a bunch of people driving to and from a big house all day long, right? Because they are going to make a lot more trips into town. This sounds very, very walkable. It sounds very easy to access all the amenities that the people staying there are going to want to access. I was just trying to draw some questions based on the conversation at large about short-term rentals. But I, one way or the other, whatever the answer is, I don't have a strong feeling right now.
Okay. And my quick question is, I just want to follow up on the MicroMass Transit contribution. Is that annualized? For how long? Is it one time? Because I appreciate that. And I will just, my comment is MicroMass Transit in the North Shore right now is serving far more employees and workforce than it is visitors. We'd like to see that change, but the reality is our workers are the ones who are using it. Instead of driving to work and taking up a parking spot, they're calling and riding MicroMass Transit to their jobs, to their schools, to shopping, and which is great. We're getting cars off road, but it's a whole variety. And I think we need to remember that too. Anyway, how many years are you going to give us money?
We're going to give you money as long as the project is operable. So it's in perpetuity, assuming the useful life is perpetual.
Good. Thank you. That was a quick answer. I'd like to go to our board members online, and we can come back if there's more questions here in the room. So first, Wes, did you have any questions?
I do have a comment that... this dovetails perfectly with the project that we have going now. One of our problems is VMTs. Well, if you're living right across the street, you don't have to drive anywhere. plus the fact that we already have microtransit. That was a requirement for the event center. And I think that we're convoluting the situation by bringing in all of this other stuff. And we set the rules. These people are playing by the rules. And I think that it's wrong for us to change the rules in the middle of the game. And I am for this project. I believe that this project will be a benefit to the entire area. I think that it would be a benefit to the reducing vehicle miles traveled, because before, when it was a drive-through bank, we had a lot of traffic, seeing as how that was just about the only game in town for that brand. So I am absolutely for this project, and I believe that once the numbers get crunched, because it would appear to me that we are moving this down the road, it would appear to me when the numbers get crunched to acceptable ratios, that we're going to find that this is something that is absolutely beneficial. Thank you.
Thank you, Wes. Belinda?
I have no further questions. I really appreciate all the questions that have been asked to date, and would love to hear what some of those responses are, and we'll see what happens after that.
Okay, great, Belinda. Alexis, do you have any questions?
No, I don't, and I appreciate what Supervisor Rice has stated, and I think, you know, as far as looking at my area plan in Washoe, I'm learning new things all the time about things that we need to update and change, so looking forward to hearing the answers to the questions, and thanks for asking, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any other questions here? And I'd like to turn it over to staff and the consultants to try to address some of those and enlighten us on those issues if they can. But I'd like to clarify one point that that was brought up earlier regarding the 5 years, the fact that we do go back 5 years to consider when something is considered a previous use. And that is what it is. It's the definition of previous use and when credit is given for previous use on a property. And I would say, let's say 13 years ago, that the definition of that was 2 years, and that was thought to be too short. And so it was a very deliberate amendment. There was an amendment to the Code of Ordinances to change that from 24 months to 60 months. So, and it would have been a change to an amendment to the Code of Ordinances that was approved by the Governing Board. So just to clarify that, you know, that was a deliberate change to that definition.
Great. Thank you. And
can I add to that? The rationale is you leave the land use that's in the model in there as long till the next model, next update of the RTP. I will tell you, 5 years may seem like a lot. I've worked in a city where it was 10 years citywide, 20 years in the redevelopment area, because they wanted it to be an incentive. So, you know, it can go all over the place.
Thank you. Gordon, I think you're on, and I think there were a number of questions that staff is looking to you to address.
Okay.
You take good notes on all those. Yeah, and let us know if you need those to be restated, Gordon, or if you've been listening in.
I have been listening in. I think I'll hit most of them, but probably not all of them, because there's a number of them. For the record, Gordon Shaw, principal of LSE Transportation Consultants, and the principal that was in charge of this analysis. I will go back, first of all, to the comment that we are playing by the rules here. We are playing with the methodology that was given to us, because it's not our job to modify that. And we have worked closely with staff to work our way through this process. I will say it is a good indication, and I like some of the comments about this really kind of plays, it shows how this sort of thing plays out. Yes, the fact that we ended up just, you know, 1 inch over the goal line is a fact that when we first ran the numbers, we were a foot or two before the goal line, and we went back to the project team and said, we need to do more. And that's where the the mandatory CTR program, we gave them a list of options and they said, that's what we'd like. And let's include that. That is a TRPA number, that 20 number. And so that got us, you know, just barely over the goal line. So a couple of the other items I want to go through. First of all, it's really table 10 is the nut that, you know, that's the core of the analysis here.
Excuse me, just for a second, Gordon. They're trying to increase the volume in the room, but could you speak up as well? Maybe if you're closer to your microphone, it would make it easier to.
Okay, if it sounds like I'm yelling at you, I'm not meaning to.
No, that's much better.
Yes, okay. So the TRPA, with a lot of effort, went through and developed something called a VMT tool, an online tool. It is, you can get it on the TRPA website. And if you've got nothing to do over some stormy weekend day, it's fun to play around with it and take a look at it. And it is very easy to use. You put in a land use, you drop a pin, it tells you what the answers are. So that is kind of the bottom line of, and for better or for worse, it is what we use on the residential side of things. Yes, we use the term condos there. We should have said multifamily on table 10. And to tell you the truth, because we have this format, so we've got two major land uses here, proposed land uses. We've got a restaurant, we have multifamily housing, and we wanted to have kind of consistent table format. So to tell you the truth, that 450 number, that comes out of the software. That comes out of the TRPA online tool. And then we've backed our way in, and that software also tells us the zone VMT per capita. And we know the 40 proposed units because we put it in. And the only piece left missing to fill out this table is the 2.3. So that 2.3 number is something that TRPA modelers have identified based upon the model and the land use population data that is built into the regional model as being the persons per household. And I have no data separate from that to say whether it is 8 or it is 1 or 1.5. I will say just, and maybe this is anecdotal, but it is easy to focus on the 8 people in 4-bedroom unit and forget about the unit next door that has 1 or 2 people or doesn't have anyone in it. I'm going to also cycle back to what Lou mentioned early on. And this is where one of those policy things where, boy, it depends on the details, doesn't it? The TRPA VMT standard is not a peak day standard. It is an average annual daily factor over the course of the year. If you look through the data in here, we did look at trip rates to identify that annual to peak day factor that you see for commercial VMT. That is based upon the relative trip generation rates on Saturdays and Sundays, which are higher than a weekday rate. So it's the average weekday that we had looked at before for the trip generation table in table 5. So we did end up increasing it to get to an average annual there, but we end up in this analysis not having any reduction for vacant units in the off seasons. And why do we do that? Because given how much we're discussing every one of these numbers now, if we don't assume 100% occupancy or we assume some percentage of these are second homes versus primary homes, we are adding a whole nother level of complexity. No, I don't believe anyone knows, like the developer, what proportion of these units are going to be 365 occupied versus a few weeks a year occupied. This whole analysis, though, on the residential VMT and on the commercial VMT, there's no seasonality built into this. Just to go off reservation here for just a second, we also did the VMT analysis for the 56-acre region park. And that was even more complicated because, boy, we had a lot of land uses there. We also there had good data on the campground at the lake and what proportion of the units are, you know, how many days on average each one of the units or campsites are used. And so we had a viable number to come up with a factor. So that's a kind of a key factor here in saying that on an average annual daily basis, that 450 may be on the high side, even if the zone persons per household on a peak day, when we all jam in on holidays, maybe on the, that may be a higher number, which means that the 450 is on a low side. But to get to an average annual number would mean consensus around the question of what proportion of these are second home units and how many days per year each one of these second units are used. So it just starts to, it shows you the complexity of this whole VMT analysis process. I'll hit one more, actually two more points, and then I probably will ask Cindy or someone to identify what other questions I need to address. It is amazing how many trips a ATM generates. That the 390 or the 73 trips that we have down there in Table 10, that is based upon ITE rates for a drive-through bank lane. But we also have the peak hour counts that were conducted at the one driveway that was serving only this at the time. And it generated in the PM peak hour, we had 22 trips just in 1 hour. So we would often identify that as to say, that means that there should be something like 150 or 200 trips over the course of a day. In retrospect, I wish we had put some cameras up and had 24 hours worth of counts on that driveway. And then we would have a real number rather than spending more time arguing about it than looking at the data. But I feel certain that 73 trips per day on the existing bank is, if anything, it's low, the existing ATM. And then the last thing I will say is, and I'm going to go back to Mr. Friedrich's comment about trip lengths. One of the other kind of key factors about the TRPA way of looking at VMT, which is different than Gavin Newsom's way of looking at VMT, is that it is only within the Tahoe region. You go to the top of Kingsbury and you're done in terms of VMT. Don't get me started. I think in terms of greenhouse gases, that's not probably the right answer, but in terms of regional planning, maybe that's the right answer. So it's only 4 miles to the top of Kingsbury from this site. And so the fact that according to the TRPA methodology, whether that person lives on just the far side of Daggett Pass up there or lives in Mound House, it doesn't make any difference to the result of this analysis. So yes, this really is playing out as showing the pros and cons of the various factors that go into a VMT analysis. But yes, we've basically followed, I'll take the word basically out. We have followed the TRPA methodology as much as we can and with staff input to get to these numbers.
Thanks, Gordon. Were there items that were missed in that discussion that board members want clarification on? I have one. Gordon, some time ago, we had quite a long discussion about, because I think I recall this answer, full-time residents versus visitors in VMT or in trips. Which one produces more?
It depends on if you're talking on a per person basis or per unit basis. We have, and I know the answer on a per unit basis if it's a area that is just the typical mix of visitor versus residential use in a neighborhood. One of the more useful things we have done, Ms. Gustafson, with your different hat on, is for Placer County, we've did the Resort Triangle Transportation Plan. And that identified, as part of that, we actually did trip generation counts and analysis on a lot of different residential areas in the North Shore in Placer County. And we found that in general, and a couple of, one of them was up behind King's Beach in Kingswood. One was over on the West Shore in Talmont and so on. And we found that those mixed use neighborhoods were actually about half of the half of the ITE rates. And this was in the summer, and this was in August. And even then, quite a lot of those units are empty. And if you're a visitor, you tend to make one or two round trips a day on average, and versus the locals that tend to have children that need to go to daycare, they need to go to soccer practice, they need all the things that we do, which is why we end up with trip rates of 9.9 to 9.5 for a single family house. That is much higher than the trip rate that we see for a second home. So
that's what I thank you. And that's what I recall, because often I think we focus on the growth in traffic in the basin being the cause of visitors, and we're all at fault, even those of us who live here and go to meetings a lot, or just saying, or have kids, children who are at early bird band or at football after or soccer, and have to get to the dentist and get to their jobs. So I think it's really important, the complexity of this model and educating all the board on all the factors that go into that, and also clearing up that idea that when you are a visitor, you do tend to carpool. You might come in different cars, but you might also then carpool to go to your activity because you don't want to risk not getting a parking spot and things. Whereas those of us that are locals tend to fight our way in. Again, just speaking as one. So, yes, Shelley. No, I wasn't quite. But anyway, I do want to get to comments. And I don't know if the board wants to have the public first, or if you want to issue your comments ahead of the public. So I will facilitate this at your discretion. Let's go to the public then.
Can I, if I could, yeah. Also, I just, while this is fresh in my mind, based on what I'm about to say is in response to a question that Jim had, Mr. Lawrence had. But when Jim Lawrence questioned earlier how they came up with this 20 VMT reduction, and then Gordon addressed that and said, well, you know, he said, well, that was from TRPA's kind of requirements. And Gordon, and correct me if I'm wrong, and feel free to interrupt me, but if I recall back from my days in developing the employer-based trip reduction ordinance, we did come up with at the time what it would be, it was called an employer transportation plan. And in this plan, there was a list of measures, transportation control measures that each employer could implement. And each one of those measures corresponds with a certain number of, you know, trips that could be reduced. So I don't know, at the time, I think we even kind of assigned some points to them, and you had to come up with a certain number of points in your plan. So Gordon, I don't know if that's what you were referring to, if those measures that were chosen by the applicant correspond with a specific number of VMT reduced. Can you clarify that?
The number comes from the Fair and Peers analysis of trip reduction options that was done as part of the VMT analysis. And it says that the largest proportion you can take on employee trips is a 21% reduction. We think that 10% of the VMT associated with the restaurant is generated by the employees, and 75% of 21% of 10% does get us to about 2% reduction. So
it actually is not what I was explaining. So, but thank you for being more thorough in that explanation, because that to me does explain it better. Thanks.
Yes, my staff is handing me papers as we speak.
Yes. Great. Then if there's no other immediate questions, let's go to the public, open this up for public comment. Go ahead, Ellie, and come on up. And to those of you online, please raise your hand in Zoom, and we'll call on you when we get to it. Go ahead, Ellie.
Thank you. Ellie Waller, my comments are all over the place. I had canned ones, but not now. I agree with Vice Chair Williamson. I think this needs to come back. I don't know if it's a month. I don't know how long, but it needs to come back. There are lots of questions that probably aren't in anybody's head yet until they get into the devils, into the details, me included. My comments are canned. I've got scribbles now. I'm glad this did come off the consent calendar. 13.7.3, activities requiring TRPA approval. Number one, all development within the high-density tourist district. I beg to differ that the Incline Village one is the same. It's not high-density tourist district. The Douglas County South Shore Area Plan was the first in September 25th, 2013, my new home. They're outdated cumulative impacts. This is old, stale data. The area plans all should have to come back and be updated with all the new projects. We're talking vacation home rentals. I don't know where to begin. I think this board should have a workshop with all the board members and the public so statistics can be brought forward from each of the local jurisdictions. Don't want to go waste my time on all of that. That's a whole nother public comment. The Douglas County South Shore Plan was completed first, and that's what applies to this. Latitude 39 objectives. The project is a mixed-use development responsive to the South Shore Directive to concentrate development in this district. This did not go before the public yet. It comes here first, then it goes to the Douglas County board. The processes are different at each local jurisdiction. You will get more information. On January 18th, the presentation was made to the property owners within this district and Lake Tahoe Resort Hotel at Heavenly Mountain. Again, the public wasn't addressed. Notification went out to 300 feet. Who's within 300 feet of this? The VMT statistic. It's somewhat smoke and mirrors to me right now. I've waded through some of this. The statistic is only as good as what goes into the model. Sounds like the model is confusing enough that it needs to be reevaluated. Probably another workshop for the public and a governing board. The project adds housing into the town center. Well, I think that's a great objective, but who determines what kind of housing needs to be in that location? Again, there wasn't a whole lot of public outreach on how that project was going to come forward. The density of the project's fine. The height of it's fine. It's the new complexion of South Shore. Change is good in some respects, but the project needs to be taken to the public. I don't know. I can't see. What else did I have here in my scribbles? Oh, tiering, that's the other issue of complexity. The 2012 regional plan has had many amendments. I've been studying the amendments and where they're happening. There is lots of new goodies that can go forward, but the area plans have not caught up. So how do we take an area plan that's stale and a regional plan that may have some cumulative impacts assessed? There has to be one project that's got to be the first. And I think, I'm sorry that this is the one that's going to have to bear the weight of what's going on. It has to start somewhere. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak. Thanks. And I will send in new written comments. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ellie. Are there others in the room? Yes, please, sir, come on up. Wait, we need to get your microphone on. There you go.
My name is Brett Tibbetts. I'm a 12-year resident of Cave Rock. I'm very much opposed to this project. I think the Tahoe infrastructure, we're completely overburdening what's here. I don't know how anybody can look at the event facility, this project, the Tahoe Beach Club, and not say we are ruining this lake. They're way over. You take a parking lot that was a parking lot and build a 6,000 seat arena. You take this, which was an old bank, and Wells Fargo nicely got rid of a branch and went to Safeway and stayed there. And the beach club, oh my God, what a mess. I'm sorry, but it's just ridiculously overdeveloped. That was my first reason. Second reason, and I hate to complain because I'm very much encouraged by the comments here, but most of the people I know in Tahoe think that TRPA is just part of the Chamber of Commerce, and that the Chamber of Commerce and the hotels control the whole place. As I understand it, there was a meeting in January of 22 with the hotels and Heavenly and the Chamber of Commerce, and they all approved this project. It was never brought to the community. There's not even a sign up there saying proposed development. There's nothing. Most people don't even know that this project is going to go, I mean, is here. And that's very troubling. It may not be fair because, as I say, I love the comments that I'm hearing today from people. It's very encouraging. The third reason why I oppose it is the transportation. You guys are in favor of the NDOT plan. I think you're behind the NDOT plan to convert a high percentage of the 50 from 4 lanes to 2 lanes. And yet we have these huge projects. There's no way these projects aren't contributing to trips on the 50. They have to. And then, you know, a year ago, we had the 50, the 80, the 395 shut down, and we all know what happened. No one could get out of here. In the fires, in the evacuation plans, it's a mess. This is very, the NDOT plan is very similar to what Placerville and Caltrans did before their fire. And we know what happened there. People died. They converted the 4-lane plan road into Placerville into a 2-lane road. And it was a mess when the fire occurred. The fourth reason I oppose it is I was appalled as a lawyer when I saw this on the consent agenda. I'm so glad you pulled it right off. But it seems like the general public is in a far worse position than developers. I'm sorry. There was $106,000. Is that what he paid? What they paid? That's all they paid for this project? I know people that have trimmed a few trees, and the TRPA shows up and wants $150,000 from them. I can't believe that they only charged these guys $106,000. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there others here in the room?
Good afternoon. Afternoon for sure. Gavin Feiger, on behalf of the League of Save Lake Tahoe, chair and vice chair, staff. So I don't even, where do we even start? I also had some notes. You know, this is the first year of the VMT threshold, right? We're still within the first year of implementation. We need to make sure we do this correctly, that we set the correct precedents, because this is going to stick with us going forward, right? I mean, to Vince's point, you can eventually change the rules, but we're not going to change them anytime soon. The league, we were there for the RPU. We were there for VMT. I spent most of my time in 2021 on the VMT threshold update. The threshold update wasn't meant to create a system that could be manipulated by shaving off VMT here and there, coming in under the screening. It was supposed to result in meaningful reductions in traffic and the associated impacts. And I think there's a chance for that to happen. We have seen that happen with a few projects. I don't think it's happening with this project. It is starting to happen with this project, and we're happy about that. The permit conditions require the employee shuttle, they require the resident shuttle, the commute reduction program. Those are all great things. We would just like to see the process improve. So end result is actually looking pretty good for us right here, despite some of the housing stuff, a separate issue. But the process is to put it in the project description and go back and forth between us and TRPA and the developers and Gordon, who also does great work. And it's endless. We did this with the event center for months, went back and forth on these numbers, finally came out on something we agreed in, came up with mitigation. It was super messy. And that was one of the main impetus for the VMT threshold update, right? So here we are. We'd really like to see the process established to set the precedent for the VMT threshold update going forward. The process, as was envisioned with by the league, and I think by the other members of the VMT initiative update stakeholder working group, was to measure VMT. If you're over 1300, we spend a lot of time talking about that little T threshold number. If you're over it, you mitigate, and then you pay the fee. Now we're talking project descriptions, permit conditions. It's just too messy. It's not clear what's going on. So we want to see VMT measured. We want to see in a consistent, clear, and consistent and clear manner that's understandable to the public and included with staff reports. And then we want to see mitigation, actually called mitigation. It's called mitigation in the PIA tool. Everybody here is calling it mitigation, Lou, Gordon, everybody's calling it mitigation. That's what it is. That's what the idea was behind the VMT threshold. The big problem, I think we can get there. That's a small, that's a minor change. The big problem is the PIA tool. So we're all relying on it. It's not complete. It's not been completed yet. So, you know, as we get this project forward, I think we can get the process straightened out, measure, mitigate, pay, and then going forward, this PIA tool needs to be a real focus. You have the staff expertise, and it just needs some funding and probably some outside consultants. We've already spent as much money as it's going to cost to update it on this meeting probably today. So, thank you.
Thank you, Gavin. Any others in the room? And just by show of hands, anyone else after this gentleman? Okay, great.
Hi, my name's Jeff Green. I live over in Cave Rock. I've been a resident here for about 12, 13 years. I know you're going to hear very few comments here from the actual residents. I would assume that the majority of you and all the developers and vendors don't even live here. Is that correct? Well, how many of you live here out of all the ones that are making these decisions for us? So that's like, 20% of the members here actually live here. 30? Okay, well, that's pretty low. So how many people do we need to make this a ballot initiative to where the public could vote on this? Can that be done? Because some of the things you're doing as the board are, they're good things. I mean, I've seen some good things in the community around me. You know, and some of the ideas about the traffic, those are good things. But they're not what the general public and the community wants. We don't want increased development. We don't want more traffic on Highway 50. We don't even want a bike lane. You know, I mean, there's just nothing there that is community generated. You know, I mean, I understand that they're meeting all the guidelines of what's legal, what's proper, and what, you know, the building codes are. That's just fine. But that's not what the people who live here want. We don't want more tourists. We have 60 million tourists visit the lake area every year. So this is going to add what? More tourists. You know, I mean, you can't hardly even get on the chairlift at Heavenly because there's so many tourists. You just can't move. You can't go to the post office. You can't go to Safeway. You can't go anywhere. So can we get this to where it becomes a ballot proposal and let us decide, not the legal board, you know, governing what's right or wrong. What's right or wrong doesn't really matter because you're doing what's legal. We're worried about where we live, you know, and the majority of you, you know, like a comment, well, I get to go up to Tahoe today to work. But you're not really that concerned that with what goes on in our community if you don't live here. Does that make sense to anyone? I guess not. But anyway, I understand that there's 7 representatives from each state. And the majority of that, they're all appointed, from what I understand. So you're not really that in tune to what we are as community and the people that live here. You know, you're maybe doing your job very well. Obviously, you've done great work on, you know, the traffic flow, the type of housing. But this is just another big major development for us residents. This does nothing for us as a community.
Sorry.
That's all I have to say. Hopefully, you guys can consider the people that live here instead of what's legal by the developer.
Thank you.
Hello, Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. My name is Craig Zager. I've lived here about 43 years. Unlike the last gentleman, I do respect the process that happens in redevelopment. If you were here in the 70s or 80s, the commercial infrastructure in Lake Tahoe was crumbling then. It was crumbling in the Great Recession. The last 10 years have been amazing what's happened here, including the event center. I think it's going to be a great addition. But the reality is that everything needs to be redeveloped at some point. This is a very unique project. It's a very exciting project. Maybe everybody doesn't agree that we need more condos or rentals, possibly. One thing that wasn't mentioned today, but Douglas County is restricting vacation rentals at 15% of a development. I'm assuming that would be the case with this development. That's only four rentals. So I don't think that's going to be the impact. The higher end real estate does generally attract second and third homeowners, not primary. If you look at the beach club, that's been an amazing result of a 161 unit, absolute shithole mobile home park that was devastating for the lake. Sorry for my vulgar comments, but he obviously doesn't know this. What they're doing now, there is a high density component going there. They had to reduce the total units that were there at one point for the benefit of us all, for the benefit of the lake. And I see this project as a very exciting new look of Lake Tahoe, including the event center. I'm not going to waste your time, but I just wanted to give you some feedback of someone that has lived here for a long time, does respect the process of redevelopment. And this is a corner that doesn't demand affordable housing. As much as we need it, it's not the location for it. It's a perfect location for what they want to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other comments here in the room? Okay, then we're going to go to Zoom, and I'd ask any of you to raise your hand on Zoom, or you can hit star 9 to unmute your phone, and we'll take your comments.
Madam Chair, the first hand raised is Toby Tyler. Toby, if you unmute, you can address the board.
Hi, my name is Toby Tyler, and I'm with the Tahoe Area Group of the Sierra Club. I've provided a letter to the governing board members, which I incorporated here by reference.
Toby?
Yes.
Can you hold just a moment? The volume is very low, so we want to make sure we hear your comments.
Okay.
Yes, much better. Okay, thank you.
All right. Name is Toby Tyler with the Tahoe Area Group of the Sierra Club. I provided a letter to the governing board members, which I incorporate here by reference. We oppose the Latitude 39 project moving forward without much more thorough public review and environmental analysis. We also suggest that this project go back to the drawing board and include a substantial workforce housing component. All we hear about is the need for affordable housing up in the basin, yet this project, a 7-story, 40 massive luxury condominium unit development with commercial space, is being fast-tracked without any prior public review process. We do appreciate this item being moved off the consent calendar, but would encourage this project not be approved today. The hue and cry for workforce housing just appears to be a smokescreen for just more and more development in the basin if this project as proposed is approved. The one question that I had that I didn't mention in my written comments are where the development rights for this project have come from. There isn't any information about this in either the packet or the initial environmental checklist, IEC, which is not even part of the agenda packet. Without more thorough discussion of this and other comments that I made in writing, this project is certainly not ready for approval. This is, in fact, an example of the egregious lack of public involvement in important decision-making processes involving critical environmental issues that your board has approved and has led to public resentment, distrust, and outrage, quite frankly. We agree with and support Bill Yates' comments. There seems to be a massive development boom being allowed without regard for the limited carrying capacity within the Tahoe Basin, which is what the TRPA is mandated to control. The present level of development is unsustainable. People who live in the basin are tired of gridlock on the roads, and TRPA continuing to allow more and more development with no regard to the subsequent increases in density, the basin's carrying capacity limits, sustainability, and Lake Tahoe's declining water quality. The current trend toward placating developers is contrary to the Tahoe Compact, which states that the TRPA was established because, quote, increasing urbanization is threatening the ecological values of the region. We contend that current trends toward ever more urbanization and crowding in the basin is contrary to the purpose of the TRPA. Transportation and greenhouse gas emissions alone should send this project back to the drawing board and the public be provided ample opportunity to evaluate a much more thorough review of cumulative impacts of increased development. Although the project is in a high-density tourist district of the South Shore Area Plan, nothing in the IEC for this development project indicates how this project would, quote, improve environmental conditions, unquote. The format of the TRPA's IEC is also deeply flawed from the outset due to the lack of analysis of transportation, density, greenhouse gas emissions, and water quality impacts. Circling back to the deterioration in the public review process, we believe this is partly...
Toby, can you hear me?
Yes?
Your time has run out of 20 seconds.
Others have gone over. I would appreciate being able to finish.
How much longer do you need?
Just a minute.
Not a minute, sir. We can't. Okay. You've had more time than anyone else so far. So I apologize, but I do need to ask you to wrap it up. You can say one last statement.
The mitigation measures should not be allowed to be bought.
Okay.
Between allowing development rights to be traded, mitigation measures to be bought, and very confusing VMT requirements, the public is left scratching their heads as to how these complicated schemes and banking systems truly help Lake Tahoe, which is in an ever.
Please submit your comments in writing too. I really very much appreciate. I know the whole board wants to hear from everybody, but we do need to keep equal time. So I apologize that we needed to cut you off there. Catherine, are there other commenters?
Yes, Madam Chair. Carol Chaplin, if you unmute, you can address the board.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Gustafson and board members and staff. For the record, Carol Chaplin, Tahoe Douglas Visitors Authority. As you know, the event center is owned by the TDVA, and it has been my observation from the new building's elevated view that the proposed project site continues to be in a state of blight. We have even had an axe-throwing business in that location, if you recall that a couple of years ago. Latitude 39 conforms to the 2012 regional plan update, which recognizes the tourist core for redevelopment projects that encourage pedestrian-friendly revitalization that takes all of our environmental goals, including reducing private vehicle dependency, into account. In short, the project checks all of these boxes. It's interesting, I think, that for the board to consider. I understand that the bank has not been in operation for over 5 years, but during that time period, banks were a real thing. You might remember going there to deposit your paycheck or your business checks, withdraw funds, speak with our personal bankers, et cetera. Most of us drove there by ourselves, one per car. Those of us who did business there drove there by ourselves more than one time per week. And yet, the only VMT credit that is being considered is the ATM use. I think this needs to be explored. It is a redevelopment project, not a new project. The former Wells Fargo Bank did generate significant VMT, and the Latitude 39 project will not, based on our reduction goals. I know that we are all focused on providing workforce housing, but this is not a location that realistically and financially can support this, nor did the TRPA RPU contemplate that. And if there is some kind of fund that people can pay into, I would certainly like to know what that is, because I'm not aware of that. And I think one of the board members suggested that, which I think that could be explored. If the board focuses on this issue in regards to this project, we will achieve only the results of the cost of doing nothing, no benefit to what we used to call the triple bottom line. Finally, I urge the board to consider what really moves the needle in regards to VMT reduction, which is meaningful transit. The microtransit system, which the project applicant is willing to consider, and what Mr. Feldman had suggested that we're starting with a lot of private and public partners, is very exciting, and it needs to be expanded. So I think that's where we need to focus our attention in order to really move the needle on the VMT issue. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next hand raise is Jay Cahill. Jay, if you unmute, you can address the board.
Yes, thank you very much. Good afternoon. My name is John Cahill, Vice President of Planning for Paragon Gaming, the majority owner and resort manager of Hard Rock Lake Tahoe, which is immediately adjacent to the proposed project Latitude 39. We have reviewed the project and staff's report and are here today to respectfully request the Board of Governors to approve this project per staff's recommendations. Latitude 39 meets the intent of the South Shore Area Plan and represents the first major private investment into residential and commercial redevelopment in the casino corridor, which was a fundamental objective of the area plan. As a neighbor, we are extremely pleased to see the redevelopment of the long vacant bank building site into a gateway land use. And as a member of the South Tahoe Alliance of Resorts, we are extremely excited that the momentum created by both Latitude 39 and the Tahoe Blue Event Center represents the beginning of the redevelopment of the casino corridor as it was envisioned by that South Shore area plan. Thank you very much for the opportunity to address the board.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, there are no other hands raised to comment on this item.
Okay, last call in the room for any other public comment that anyone who hasn't spoken. Okay, then we'll come back to the board for comments and go ahead, Shelley. I'll go to you first.
Let's see. You know, this has been, I think, a useful and fruitful conversation. And if there are some process improvements that are required, I think they need to be explored. But I don't think it's appropriate for us to, you know, do that at the expense of a project that has met all of our requirements. I think that is a clear violation of trust for the people who work with us, you know, who look for solutions, who want to, I think, in this case, do something constructive. Have made a lot of concessions, whether they were required, you know, as mitigations or whether they were volunteered. I think it's a pleasant combination of a lot of important and useful mitigations, and I think they should be applauded for that. That, and with respect to the comments by members of the public who have testified as residents of the basin, I understand your frustration. I've been one of the more outspoken proponents of a basin user fee to try to control the number of people entering the basin at any one time. And that's a discussion for another day. But I think you need to take a look at this problem more holistically. You live in a very popular tourist destination. That's where you've chosen to buy your home. And I used to have a home, a family home in Tahoe City. We sold it. I rarely come up to the lake except for meetings. Because Lake Tahoe has changed. I remember it as a child, and it has gone through some significant changes. But, you know, the old saying used to be that there are only two things that you can rely on, and that's death and taxes. Well, actually, there are three: death, taxes, and change. And so, as I say, I think it would be a terrible violation of goodwill not to move this project forward. Providing all of the questions that have been asked by the board and the public here today have been satisfactorily answered. So I am not in favor of postponing consideration of this project. As I say, this was a learning process. If our code needs to be amended, then let's go through the proper process of amending it and bringing those amendments back to the board for our consideration. So that's all I have to say. And by the way, one more last comment with respect to the ATM. Banking has changed as a result, in part because of COVID. I know the Wells Fargo Bank in Carson City, there are two banks in Carson City. Nobody rarely goes into the bank anymore. They rarely use the drive-up window. Now you can make deposits at the ATM, get cash at the ATM. Exactly right. You know, I mean, so I don't doubt that the use of that ATM was pretty extensive. You know, is responsible for a lot of DMT. So I don't think, you know, giving the developer credit for those trips isn't appropriate.
Okay, next I had Jim, then I had Barbara, okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think a lot of my comments are going to be very similar to Shelley's. I really do appreciate the presentation. I really appreciate the public comments. I think it was a great discussion. And so, I mean, that's going to be my first comment regarding this on consent calendar and whether it should be a full board review. I'm glad it was pulled. I think these types of discussions are important. I think it's good for transparency and accountability. I certainly understand the threshold of, you know, if it meets all of the code, then it should be on consent calendar. But realistically, just about everything that comes to the board meets the code at that point in time because you work it out ahead of time. So I think we need to think about that bar a little bit differently. And these types of projects, I think, really do warrant a public hearing just because of the complexities of the issues. That being said, you know, after hearing the comments and doing my own research and diving into it, I like Shelley, I'm a firm believer that we have a duty to review projects and make our findings based on the rules of the law and the code of ordinances. If we start moving and deciding that we're going to arbitrarily decide, you know, our own personal feelings and opinions on projects, that historically is when this board has gotten in trouble. We have a contract with the public to uphold code of ordinances in the regional plan, and part of that duty is if the project comes forward and it meets all of those things, we should review it through that lens, not through our own personal biases or acquaintances. There might be other uses out there that I might personally like better, but that's all my own opinion. I'm comfortable that this project checks all the boxes, meets the code of ordinances, meets the regional plan. I think there's legitimate questions regarding the current model. My role in different scientific practices and natural resources is there's always questions on models. None of them are perfect. There's always going to be questions. But if we need to take a look at it, and if this is truly a learning first year that we need to kind of revisit some of the inputs and the outputs and recalculate, I think that's fair, and that should be more forward-looking, but it shouldn't be on the onus of an applicant that applied for a project under our current rules. So, I mean, with that, I'm comfortable with the project, and like Shelley, I would be uncomfortable just kind of moving it out to a future date with really no vibe basis for doing so.
Thank you, Jim. Barbara?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for all your comments and to the people in the public. I appreciate it. Unfortunately, I didn't get all of my questions answered before I came, so I was really happy to hear all the comments and the input. 8 years ago, we sold our condo. I've lived up here for 24 years. And in where we were, our HOA fee was $250 a month. It is now $1,000 a month. So if you're going to look at something, look at HOA fees. You don't have anything to do with that on this board. That has to do with where you live and what you do. So that's one of the things. Bill, I'd love to invite you down to Vegas and see if you could help us down there, not only with the traffic, but you heard about the 12 hours going from Vegas to California. Well, we could use your input down there. But the code, I don't think, should be changed for one issue or one thing that we're all thinking of doing. I do agree with both Jim and Shelley, and think that it should go ahead. But if you really want to do something, look at what it is that's affecting everybody. And people can't afford to live up here. You can't afford it, and you certainly couldn't afford. I could not afford the HOA fees now. That's ridiculous that they've gone up that much. But you need to look at all of the issue, the whole thing. We do meet the code, and you can't amend the code for one project. If you had brought that to our attention or given us something earlier, all of the negativity that I got on the email was, I think, 2, and that was given to me in the last 24 hours. That isn't enough time to really look at it or research anything. So if you do have questions about these, if that's part of the issue that you need to get this out sooner, that's fine. But you can't change the code for one issue. I don't think that. I think, as you stated very eloquently, Jim and Shelley, that we do have, and we have met, that people have met the code enforcement issue. But I think there were a lot of really, really good questions today and comments. I'm appreciative. And I do think that this was one of those items that needed to be talked about. So I think we need to look at it, be mindful of what we put on the consent calendar. That's up to us, and I think whoever the chair is at this point. Bill, you said it very, very well when you made those comments. So I'm just asking for, if somebody calls and asks questions, or somebody has questions that they submit to you from the board, that staff get them out, respond to them. That would be very helpful. But thank you for all the work that you've done to the vendor and to the staff. We do want to thank you for, because I know it's a lot. It's a lot of work. And there are things, this kind of reminds me of what I've been going through with the Secretary of State's office, but you have to understand what the code is. You have to know it. You have to know the laws. Those are things that you can look at, and you can investigate and get that information. So I think that does make a difference. Thank you. Thanks, Cindy.
Thanks, Barbara. Bud.
Thank you. For the gentleman's information, I'm one person who has been a resident of the region, not necessarily from the basin, but from Reno for 70-some years. And I have a lot of experience with the lake, and I've been a homeowner here now for 25 years. And I have to defend my fellow board members on this point, too, because every one of them has Lake Tahoe, has the best interest of Lake Tahoe in mind. I've been so impressed serving with this board. And we'll be talking about our three members we're losing here in a few minutes. But, our board members really do place Lake Tahoe in its best interest first. That's not to say that there can't be differences in opinion. And there have been. And there will always be differences in opinion. But I agree with Shelley and Jim Lawrence that rules are the rules. We have procedures. We have projects now. This project is bigger than someone just wanting to expand their patio deck or something. This is a major project in a major commercial tourist zone, which has been designated that way ever since the compact was adopted. They've met the requirements. It would be wrong for us to tell them, well, you know, there's some good suggestions out there, and we really should change some of these rules. We can't do it on the fly, and we can't do it in 1 month. So I think that we swallow hard if you have objections to it, and we approve it. And I'm for that. Now, I would also say, though, that I think Bill Yates has really, once again, has hit several nails on the head here of things that need to be addressed. And, you know, I'm learning a lot every time I go through these meetings. You know, and a lot of these, the standards that have been set by TRPA now for 10 years, you know, I understand the basis for the standards. I'm starting to get to know them fairly well. But I also recognize that there might be a good reason to review some of these standards and to see where are we going with this. You know, it's fair to complain about the development of Tahoe and too many tourists. And yes, Tahoe has become tremendously popular with tourists. But, you know, we all have to understand, too, that this isn't our little private playground. We have all benefited from living here. We all enjoy it. But, you know, we don't own everything in the basin. I mean, it's not like our little club here. Well, everyone in this room, but we can set the rules and tell everyone else not to come in. So, you know, we have to look at the culture, the way it's changed. We have to look at the development of the area. clearly the development of this area. I mean, when they did the bi-state compact 50 some years ago, they stopped that uncontrollable development. So we don't look like Lake Arrowhead down in Southern California or some of these other places that have been overdeveloped. Now, that's not to say that some of the developments that have been done in the interim couldn't be improved with new rebuilt projects that meet our standards. And I think, you know, let's give the TRPA of years past a pat on the back for having stood up and having done that. It's not perfect, but, you know, we can't return this lake to natural history. I mean, it is what it is. So, you know, when you get somebody who comes in an area with a project that meets all of the current requirements, I think that we have to honor that, respect it. But that's not to say we can't change it in the future, and I would be all for taking some of these things and looking at them to see if we need to make some changes. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. John?
Quick question. If the VMT had come in two over the screening level, what would be the process for additional analysis? How much time would we be talking about?
They would have simply added two more VMT to their commuter trip reduction to get it under.
Right, but the part about it, you know, it said because it was under, you know, additional analysis was not required. So, would the very process of further investigation or not?
You know, let's. I don't know how much you want to get into the nitty gritty of our analysis, but fundamentally, the VMT analysis is the VMT analysis. And so, if it shows over 1,300, they have your developer before it comes to us. Or when it's discussed with us, has several options. They can mitigate it, or they can design the project so they come back underneath the 1300, right? That same thing we do with like coverage or other kind of commodity limitations. Or they could have it remain over, then they'd have to, quote, mitigate it. So instead of being a part of the project, it would be part of a mitigation package, but for us, we always put everything into conditions. So, you know, whether it's a part of the project or part of mitigation, it effectively is going to have the same result. I don't know, Bridget, if you want to add anything to that. But fundamentally, whether it be to get you under the 1300 screen or to get down to the 1300, it effectively is designing a project that has less of an impact. You guys want to add to that?
Again, at Bridget Cornell, the Code of Ordinances lays it out that for different land use categories, you either meet the screening or you don't meet the, or, you know, a project either meets the screening or doesn't meet the screening. If the project doesn't meet the screening, there are some standards of significance that need to be met, and they vary by land use category. So there may be some additional, there may have been some additional components if they did not meet the screening.
Given how close it was, given, you know, the subjectivity in a sense of many of the variables, given this a new tool, given the public hasn't seen this, many of the board hadn't seen these variables, there's a question about workforce trips, you know, we learned about that, whether vacation rental trips will be greater than anticipated. It seems to me there'd be some merit to having this board and the public have a little more time just to have those a part of the record and see the basis for those variables. It doesn't mean that in the end that we don't decide that it meets all the criteria, but just for the sake of transparency and understanding what has gone into the project. And also, I think, just addressing some of the public's concerns about cumulative impact. What about housing? How many market rate developments do we do that don't have any housing associated with them? Where do the workers live? How far do they travel? It may not be specifically required, and Carol Chaplin and others said maybe a fund would be supported, but there is no such item now. Are there opportunities to broaden Lake Link connected to this? Or, you know, are there just some ways to address some of these concerns in a way that could be part of the public record and give the public a little more chance to understand how the, how, you know, how these pieces relate? So I would personally be more comfortable taking a look at those, having the public have a chance to take those variables, given that, you know, this was really not part of the public record up until just very recently. And there wasn't, I'm impressed by how many people came out, but I think it would do it better justice to have that full, just a little more transparency for a little longer period of time on some of those components that go into that. Maybe we come out at the end and say, yeah, they checked every box. There's nothing else that can be done on housing. There's nothing else can be done in transportation, what have you. You know, it doesn't matter whether or not it's going to be a vacation rental, but I think it would just be helpful, at least for me, to have that information before voting. And I thought Haley's initial suggestion in response to Bill's question about the 2.3 or 2.5 people or 8 people was a good one. And so I would be more comfortable making a decision after all those things have a little more time to be put on the record and fleshed out for the public to evaluate them myself.
Thank you, John. Ashley?
Yeah, thanks, John. And thanks, honestly, to everyone. The first time this is, we're coming on using this threshold analysis, right? This is a, we're learning a lot of lessons as we do this. So I think it's great that we're going through this, that we're having this discussion. And I think, yes, at the end of the day, we will say, yes, you've met all the rules and you've done what you needed to do. But in the meantime, I do think we need a little bit more assessment on the VMT analysis, field-based observations. There's an outfitter included in the design plans, but the use of that outfitter, it's unclear if that outfitter is only serving the people who live there or if the public will be going to visit that outfitter and if that will generate more VMT. That was not in the VMT analysis. So there's a number of things that we discovered were not in the VMT analysis that would be helpful to have in to look at whether or not we need more mitigation. I agree that the mitigation based on the analysis we have seen has gotten us below 1300, but based on the issues we've identified in the analysis, there may need to be more mitigation and there may need to be what John pointed out, additional trips given to mitigate below 1300. So I just think revisiting that VMT analysis and coming back next month, the end result may be the same, but because it's the first time we're using this threshold and this approach, I think it's really important that we set the precedent of getting it right.
Thank you, Ashley. Sue?
Yeah, thank you. I have to agree with Shelley and a few of the others that say that you don't change the rules in the middle of the process. If the rules need change, and I agree, you know, there needs to be more analysis on some things, but that's a part of the process. That's why we had the regional plan update. That's why we have had discussions. We've had public discussions with all of our local jurisdictions about vacation rentals. We had them for, gosh, I don't know how many meetings we had right here with the public. We've had these discussions. We've had discussions about VMTs. We've had discussions about all this, and we've come to this design. And yes, there may be flaws in it, but that's something that needs to happen in a process where we go back and look at that process, not at one development, but at the entire process. So I think there's a little issue I have with making a decision based on what we already have set, that we've already discussed, that we've already had public input on, and then move forward with? Or do you just delay until we go through the process again? It took us how many years to get the RPU designed? And that wasn't necessarily important. So another analysis, sure, make it a part of our process. But to stop one development, one because of these ongoing questions, that is a separate, in my mind, a separate way of a separate process. So I just want to make that point really clear to say that, you know, again, we've gone through vacation rentals. We've gone through the processes of having a lot of public input on a lot of these questions that are being asked, and rightfully so, that we need to come back and review it. But this is not the time.
Can I just respond to that? I just want to make it crystal clear. I'm not referring to any of those other issues. I'm specifically talking about the VMT analysis on this item, not revisiting the VMT threshold, just the analysis for this item. That is it.
Thank you. Okay. Vince and then Bill.
I guess on that, you know, I agree with what a lot of people have said. I think, you know, we have rules. If people meet those rules, we have to approve them. And so if the, and my feeling is we don't know how everything works completely, but our staff, they're the ones who do this and they know. And if they have any questions, I'd say if you have any concerns, any questions, then we need to know that. But you have brought this project forward and you believe it meets all our rules and regulations. And so I think we have to vote on it today, because otherwise we're just wasting someone else's money. And I hate doing that. It's just wrong. And ultimately, if we get into that culture, it will drive up the cost of every project that we do here, including the affordable ones and workforce housing that we hope to build in the future. So I think we approve this because it meets all our rules. And then if we don't like the rules or the outcomes of our rules, we have to change them after the fact. Thank you.
Thank you, Vince. Bill?
Well, this is difficult, but, you know, I don't think in 10 years I've ever voted more than once or twice against something you would want. It isn't, I mean, I'm sorry. I just don't accept 2.3 as the thing. It's not, I don't have an issue with the process. I think this has been very good. I appreciate what Gordon had to say. I mean, I love my staff. That's been so great. I just disagree with you guys. It's overlooking what this is going to be. This is a big vacation home rental. It's going to have a lot of people in it that just come and go, and bring more people and all the things without any benefit at all. And also, quite honestly, the other part of me that I just makes me not vote for this. This is not what I would want. If I was really sitting down here thinking about the fact that Barton is moving over there and we're dealing with all the changes that will occur as a result of Barton Hospital moving to where the old casino used to be. Wow, what kind of housing? I mean, so it does not meet what I expected out of this kind of review. This project, we do these things, and I'm just not going to vote for this one. I'm sorry, but I respect all of your different opinions, why you got to the place you are. I don't want to delay this project. Vince is right. That's not the issue. I don't, but I just can't vote for it. Sorry.
Thanks, Bill. Haley?
There it goes. Thanks. Similarly, really interesting discussion today. I threw out the question of whether we wanted to delay. And I think part of what I've heard today, I've been persuaded that we should vote today. But I think what I've also certainly heard today is that we have lessons learned for the next project to come forward and what we're looking for in the analysis. And I think that's good. I'm really glad that we all had that discussion. I'm glad it was public. I'm glad we have public input on that. Vince, those were particularly compelling arguments, particularly because you do this. So thank you for bringing those forward. Thank you all for entertaining the thought of considering this more. And I think one of the things we learn going forward is we're going to have questions on the analysis. So thank you, staff, for being patient and answering those. But I am persuaded at this point that voting on this today is the right thing to do, and I plan to support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Haley. Now let's go to our board members online. I believe everybody's had a chance here. Let's go. Wes, would you like to start out?
I would be more than happy to. Sorry I couldn't be there today. I've had some issues, and the doctors are working on them. So one of the things I want to say is when I moved here 31 years ago, the TRPA was known as a royal pain in the whatever. Under Joanne, that changed. Under Julie, I see that change continuing. I think we chose wisely. But I believe that the integrity of the entire organization, it depends upon us following our own doggone rules. We set the bar. We've set the rules. When we change the rules at the last minute, it does nothing to further trust in this organization. This project meets the rules that this body has imposed. There's no reason for delaying it. I understand the reluctance of some members, but I truly believe that we need to have this voted on today. And I believe that we need to approve this. And as a last parting shot, Barbara, it's been great working with you. I'm going to miss you.
Thanks, Wes.
Belinda, would you like to?
Yes, thank you very much. Just a quick comment, and that is that, you know, this discussion, I think, has been very productive for all of us, and hopefully including, you know, the project proponents that are out there listening to this, and all of our, you know, members of the public who have provided comments both for and against this project. You know, I totally agree with many of the comments that have been made by members Conrad Seda and others that, you know, the analysis issue for me is one that is a very compelling argument about, you know, the need to maybe look at some of these issues that may not be as apparent in the staff report as we would like. And so I guess for me, I'd really love to hear definitively from staff that those issues were all considered and they still stand by their recommendation. And if that's the case, then I think I would be in a position to support this project. But I don't believe I've heard that affirmative statement from staff yet. So that would be one of the things I'd like to put out there.
Thank you, Belinda. And Alexis, would you like to weigh in?
I am happy to support this project today. I think the staff did the analysis we've asked them to do with the rules we put in place. And I look forward with this board to continuing to tweak those and make them better. And I want to have those conversations moving forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Alexis. And I'll just weigh in with a couple of comments now as well. And one thing I wanted to, one question that came up, this is not the first time we've used the VMT tool. This may be the largest time, most controversial time, but we've been using this VMT tool for a year. Okay. And so that weighs in my decision-making too, because many other projects have gone through using this same tool, but maybe not to this magnitude. Obviously, for a North Shore resident, this is a very tall project. If you sat in on any of our RPIC meeting, you realize what 60 feet brings, let alone 61 feet brings. But in this setting, it is in context with the surroundings. And so I understand that. I do agree that the VMT analysis and all of the traffic that I try to understand and I believe I have a fairly good grasp on it is all based on assumptions that are in standards that we need to continue to take a look at and probably do a workshop on with our full board of what goes into that model and why, because there are 15 bedroom homes that are in my district, my area of Placer County, and in Sioux down just south of my district. I've seen some rather large ones. And those are using 2.3 persons per household. And we know maybe they sit empty 90% of the year, but when they're full, they're full. And many, many, many years ago, I did a study at the PUD when I was at Tahoe City PUD asking people, how many people use your home Christmas to New Year's? Because for 40 years living here, you don't move your car during Christmas to New Year's, right? You're just, it's ridiculous to either be here with, you know, when every home is occupied. And sure enough, some of the people, because it was anonymous, gave us data that would show 26 people in a three-bedroom home. I might have had that many people in my home at times with kids sleeping on the floor and in bunk beds. And I understand that. And that is part of the traffic pattern. How do we regulate that? How do we make assumptions on that? So I think it's a very worthwhile discussion to have. And Bill, I'm sorry you won't be here when we dive into this again for the board to understand it so that we can feel comfortable with the conclusions that come out of it. But I too weigh in on the side of our staff have analyzed this. I trust in LSC's analysis. I've seen their work for decades now in the basin and trust their analysis as well. And so that's where I stand. But I do think there's enough questions here that we really should put it on our workshops for the future to dive in and really understand it. So it is equitable to every project, right?
That's, I think, what we want to look at.
Madam Chair, yes. Belinda's still waiting for a response from staff. Oh. If they still have confidence in their recommendation.
Yes, yes. They nodded down there, and Belinda probably didn't see that. Yeah, she didn't see the nod. I am so sorry. You're correct.
And Madam Chair, I have some wrap-up comments, and okay. We absolutely stand by the staff recommendation. But
go ahead.
May I continue?
Yes, oh, okay. Continue. I'm done.
Well, I just want to thank the board and the public, and especially the TRPA staff. You did a fantastic job. I mean, these are very technical topics. I'm hearkening back to some years ago where we had soils conversations of land capability challenges and multiple soils experts that had differences of opinion, and they were all legitimate. So I think what this discussion for me, my biggest takeaway is that we can have these hard conversations. And I think that's what we heard the board wanted, more policy discussion at the dais. So I'm glad that we were able to do that. A couple of takeaways I wanted to note, we certainly will vet more with our agenda review with members of the board, you know, what we put on consent and what we don't. And I'll commit going forward to work with you all on that. Another takeaway was, you know, how we talk about these new policy changes. Anytime all of us who have worked in policy for many years, whenever there's a big programmatic shift, the implementation takes time to work out the kinks. When a big federal bill passes, there's myriad technical corrections that happen over the course of a couple years. So, you know, we have had a year of working with this project impact assessment tool, and we do have some work to do still, and let's daylight that, and let's daylight our data together in some workshops. And I think the last couple months of workshops that we've been having that under John's leadership here have been really productive. So we'll commit to do that going forward. And I also want to really emphasize what I heard multiple board members say, that you know, this is an inflection point for this agency to hold up a mirror at our own rules and to say, what are the kinds of projects that we're seeing around the basin happen, and what role do we have in the policies that we set forth? And take a hard look at that. And that was really where we started in this introduction, because we do encourage high-end development at the lake because of, for lots of reasons. And what can we do about that going forward? But changing the rules midstream is never advisable. So I've appreciated that discussion of the members here. So we'll commit to bring back more data daylighting in some workshops on the PIA tool, the VMT analysis. We'll definitely look at that in terms of updating our regional transportation plan, which we're kicking off next year. So the time is ripe for that. And then certainly we stand by our staff recommendation. We do. And I appreciate the hard work of our team that has worked on this for almost a year to get to this point. So with that, I certainly turn it back to you for your deliberations and your pleasure how to move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. Appreciate that. So with that, I'd entertain a motion on this. Wes, would you like to make a motion?
Most certainly, seeing as how it's in my district. I move that we approve the required findings, including the mitigating findings of no significant effect. And I move to approve the proposed project subject to the conditions contained in the draft permit and shown in attachment B.
He's combined the motions. Wes, can you just make the first motion? And strike the second motion, because we need to make the findings first.
You could have saved my breath if you'd have told me that.
Sorry. I didn't know you were on a roll. Wes, I had another question.
I move to approve the required findings, including in mitigated finding of no significant effect.
Did we want to... Does the board have a desire to incorporate the $10,000 per year within the permit, or is it you just want to leave it as a commitment that they've made here at public session?
I would just soon leave it as a commitment that they've made.
The approval of the project wasn't based on that commitment of $10,000 a
year. That's correct.
So I would just trust that the developer, represented by Lou Feldman. Lou, I'm looking to you to enforce this requirement in perpetuity. So I'm assuming you're going to live a long time.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor. Maria, will you call the roll?
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Conrad Zeta?
No.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Ms. Diss?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
No.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Honigman?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Mr. Yates?
No.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Madam Chair, the motion passes.
Thank you. And Wes, would you like to make the second motion?
Most certainly. I move to approve the proposed project subject to the conditions contained in the draft, in the draft permit as shown in attachment B.
Thank you, Wes. Maria, will you call the roll?
No.
Yes.
Maria's not on mic. I don't hear
Sorry.
Maria.
I will start over. Ms. Conrad Seda?
No.
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
No.
Ms. Diss?
Yes.
Mr. Honigman?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Mr. Yates?
No.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
And Madam Chair, the motion passes.
Okay, well, thank you all very much. Appreciate the healthy discussion today and the opportunity to really dive in more details as we move forward. I think it's imperative we do that based on the public comment and confusion on our VMT analysis, so at least as one board member. I know that we've had already some folks that need to leave from the governing board and some that are going to leave shortly. So we're going to jump right away into our administrative matters and start with a resolution recognizing governing board member Barbara Sagaski, Nevada's Secretary of State. This is an item found on page 373. And I have worked with staff to request some assistance in going through these resolutions. So, Jim, I think you've agreed to read this one.
I enthusiastically agreed to do this, but I understand. Do you want me up at the dais? It's weird being up here. it's a little bit with a heavy heart that I'm doing this because I've known Barbara a long time before her role on the board and certainly worked with her as a state legislator. I guess if I don't read this, can we make her stay? So I will, before I read the resolution, I don't know who I do board member comments, but I will start with my own comments. I just always been so impressed with Barbara, you know, in all the years that I've known her. She's always come prepared. She always is thoughtful. And she always takes her role and her job very seriously. And, you know, that is just, you know, that's just immeasurable. I mean, it is so much needed, you know, having good public service workers like Barbara. It's a loss to the board to have you move on, but I'm happy for you. And I'm just tremendously thankful to be a co-worker with you and be a co-board member. And I just wish you all the very best. And so we do have a resolution, but then Cindy, I don't know if we want to do board member comments or
board member comments. I've been asked to do after you read the resolution.
Gotcha. All right. Okay.
So I'm following my script. You just didn't have the script.
I just didn't. Yeah, know. No. All right. So with that, I will read the resolution. This is a resolution number 2022-, resolution recognizing governing board member Secretary Sagafsky, Nevada Secretary of State, for her service to the Lake Tahoe region. Whereas Barbara Sagafsky has faithfully and diligently served the people of Nevada as the Nevada Secretary of State and as a Tahoe Regional Planning Agency governing board member from 2015 to 2022, whereas she has contributed greatly to upholding the Bi-State Tahoe Regional Planning Compact and supporting the restoration, protection, and enhancement of the Lake Tahoe and its communities. Whereas Barbara served on the Forest Health and Wildfire Committee, helping to enhance forest health and improve wildfire reduction and mitigation strategies. Whereas she always provided a very watchful and prudent perspective while serving as a member of the Operations and Governance Committee. And whereas she has and continues to serve the region as a strong advocate for improving the scenic beauty of the lake through actions such as improved buoy management. Yeah, have the buoy permit right before. So now, therefore, be it resolved that the governing board of the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency does hereby express its sincere appreciation for Barbara's many years of service to Nevada and the Lake Tahoe region and extends its best wishes to her for all her future endeavors. Passed and adopted by the governing board of the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency this day of December 14th, 2022. By vote.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you. I appreciate that. And now I'll open it up to any board member comments or questions. Can you stay longer or
but go ahead. I just have to say that the buoy management, I picked that out in the very, very beginning. And Jim, now that I know it's you.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Thank you. Barbara, it's really been a pleasure working with you on this board and also with Scott Anderson and your other staff people that have filled in from time to time. They've all been very diligent and very positive and helpful to work with, and so I thank you for that. But I did want to say one word. As a lifelong Nevadan, I want to thank you for what you've done for the state of Nevada. And for those of you who live in California, you may not know it, but Barbara followed the law. She followed the law. Thank God. I mean, you may disagree with the results, but Barbara has set the standard, at least here in the Western United States, for public servants, and I thank you for that.
Absolutely. Well said, Bud. Sue.
Thank you. Barbara, you know, when we first met, I wasn't sure we had anything in common, and then we started walking around together, and then I realized, you know, we had a lot of things in common, especially the sunglasses, which I laugh about still. But no, your dedication is obvious, and your love of Nevada and all that you've done. I can't tell you how much I've appreciated working alongside you, and you've just always been there and been a really great voice of just naturally how we should be thinking about things. And that's been really important. You've helped a lot. So thank you. Really appreciate your time here.
Bill, you wanted to come in?
Barbara, this is a thank you for that wonderful tour of the Secretary of State office we had our retreat there at Carson. And you were so sweet, just taking me around and showing me and introduced me to the treasurer and all of that. And I enjoyed your comments about all of the acronyms. I appreciated that. It's like I really kept saying to Hester, we need to cut out these acronyms as best we could. But thank you. And I agree with Bud. I just thank you for just hanging in there. And good for you.
Haley, and then Shelley.
And it honestly, it just bears repeating the calls that I got from across the country saying, Nevada, the integrity you showed the nation's eyes were upon you and you exceeded expectations. Thank you for following the law. Thank you for devoting your life to public service. And just thank you for everything you did. It really, it's almost beyond words.
Shelley?
Barbara, you have a lot of very, you know, admirable qualities. You only have two defects. One, you don't like buoys. And that's a major defect for people who like to boat, believe me. And what was number two? Maybe there's only one character flaw that you have. Oh, the other character flaw is you live in the southern part of our state. Yeah, you did indeed. Anyway, you'll be missed. Thank you so much for your service.
Madam Secretary, we have something for you if you want to walk up to Jim.
Well, we have some more online that want to
speak. Oh, very good.
I believe Jessica wants to say something, and then I'll look at Wes next. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, I just got connected to my audio. I'm sorry I had to leave and not be there in person, but I wanted to echo what so many others have said, and Bud and Haley, and again, as a Nevadan, for all the secretary's work in her quote-unquote day job, not to mention all of her hard and dedicated work on behalf of Lake Tahoe, but truly, as Member Williamson said, or Vice Chair Williamson said, you know, the eyes of the nation were upon us, and the secretary pulled through in an incredible way and showed great integrity. And as a Nevadan, I'm very thankful for that. And also thankful to you and to Scott for all your hard work on this board and so many of the other boards that you serve on in your role as Secretary of State. Coming from the governor's office previously to my current role, I'm lucky to have, staffed the outgoing governor on so many boards that he served on with you. And so I've seen time and time again how prepared you always are, and Scott, and how much time and consideration you put into all of the decisions you had to make. And even when, the members disagreed, it was always clear that you had that dedication to, following the law and doing what you thought was right. And I just really want to thank you for that and echo all of the sentiments in the resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Jessica.
Thanks, Jessica. Wes?
Thank you. Barbara, it's been my privilege to know you for a very long time. TRPA and well before TRPA. And I really need to say that the definition of integrity is standing up against your friends when you know what you're doing is right. And the heat that you took for doing what was right was absolutely wrong. And I want you to know how much I appreciate your honesty and your commitment to doing what's right for the people of the state of Nevada. And I pray that our paths cross more frequently in the future. And thank you for what you did.
Thank you, Wes.
Any other board member comments? I will just echo everything, Barbara. I had the opportunity to watch you before I was on this board and see the devotion you had for Lake Tahoe. And I think absolutely what you did for our nation and Nevada during the election. But when I look at what it takes to serve on this board and the time commitment, the dedication and the commitment to protecting this lake is just incredible. And on behalf of all of the residents here, former residents as well as current residents and sometimes residents and all the visitors, thank you for what you do to protect this lake.
Thank you, Cindy. I appreciate you.
Absolutely. And so any public comment on this item? I'm not seeing any. And Barbara, you can say a few words too.
Madam Chair, there are no hands raised online to comment on this item.
Okay, then we'll bring it back to the board and the presentation, which is already happening. Okay, we officially do need a motion, I believe, to adopt this resolution.
So moved.
Okay, Mr. Yates. And roll call vote, or should we just acclamation. By acclamation, all those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
I don't know actually what to say, and usually politicians are never short of anything to say, but I do want to thank each and every one of you, and what a pleasure it's been to be on TRPA. I miss all of you. I absolutely loved coming up here, and it wasn't just because I told my staff that. But I do love coming up here, and I do love serving the people of the state of Nevada. I really do love it. But I want to thank my staff, because Scott Anderson and Mark Velosh and all of the others helped prepare me for all of these meetings, because they would go over everything, all the records, and ask the questions, and we'd have discussions. And it was very healthy. It was great. I got to learn so much more about the lake. I thought I knew everything when I came on. Didn't know anything, hardly. But it's beautiful. And I just commend all of you for sticking it out and being here. And Sue, I'm going to miss working with you. And Bill, I'm going to really miss your emails that you don't send. But he got hacked a few times, and I was a recipient. But thank you for everything, all of you. And thank you for this picture. It's beautiful. And I'll always remember all of you. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
So our next item on the agenda is 6B. This is a resolution recognizing Governing Board Member Secretary Sue Novosel, El Dorado County Representative. I'm not sure. I think Secretary was held over from the last one. And Bill Yates is going to read the resolution, and then we will go to board comments.
Hit the green button, Bill. So, resolution recognizing Governing Board Member Sue Novosel, El Dorado County Representative for her service to the Lake Tahoe region. Whereas Sue Novosel served on the TRPA Governing Board as a representative of the El Dorado County, California Board of Supervisors for 8 years from 2015 to 2022. Thank you, Sue. Whereas she has contributed greatly to upholding bi-state Tahoe Regional Planning Agency's compact and supporting the restoration, protection, and enhancement of Lake Tahoe and its communities. Whereas Sue has served on both the Environmental Improvement, Transportation, and Public Outreach Committee and the Tahoe Living Working Group. Whereas she has served as vice chair for both the Legal Committee and the Forest Health Wildfire Committees. Whereas Ms. Novosel has served as chair of the Local Government Committee and Housing Committee as it addressed important and difficult issues, including short-term rentals and the lack of affordable and achievable housing in the Tahoe region. Big thank you. Whereas as she represented the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency at the California Association of Councils of Government. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Governing Board of the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency extends its gratitude and best wishes to Sue as she retires from the El Dorado County Board of Supervisors and the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency Governing Board to pursue future endeavors, including enjoying the beautiful Lake Tahoe region she has worked to protect and enhance. That's it. We have to vote, and then we have to pass it.
Yeah, well, so we'll go to board member comments first, or questions. Yes, Barbara.
I can ask her a question?
You can.
You can ask Bill a question for you. Where do you get your sunglasses? No, just... Sue, you have absolutely been an inspiration to me. I have learned a lot from you about California and Nevada, that even though we only have a fourth in Nevada, we're still a compact. We get together. But I love the fact that I've learned a lot from you, and our friendship it just blossomed. It really did. And I'm really grateful for you and everything that you've done on this board and what you've done for your county. You're an amazing elected official, and I know that we'll be in contact, and thank you for everything that you've done.
Shelley?
Sue, one of the things that I love about you is the fact that you're so down to earth. I mean, you really are, and you have kind of a somewhat, in this day and age when there's a lot of cynicism, I mean, your very upbeat, positive attitude is really an inspiration to everyone around you. You know, and you've got, in addition to that, a great deal of just good old fashioned common sense and sensitivity. You've got, compared to myself, a very sweet disposition. So you're my inspiration, Sue. Anyway, you're going to be missed, but I'm sure you'll do a lot of camping, because I remember that conversation we had when I was absent from the board retreat, and we kind of shared some stories. And it just reinforces the fact that you're a very unique personality, and I mean that in a very positive way. All of your common sense attributes, and the fact that you attend these meetings and are always willing to look at the other side of an issue and the final analysis, in my opinion, you always make the right decision. And that's very uncommon. So thank you.
Other comments? Yes.
Thanks, Cindy. Thank you, Sue. I mean, just all I can say is really thank you. I have learned so much from you. It's been such a pleasure to serve on the board with you. Comments like Shelley, I mean, you're always just coming with such a positive attitude and trying to find a solution. And it's just, I mean, this is hard being on this board. It's a lot of work, and you just make it that much more enjoyable. And I just really thank you for doing that. And I learned so much from you. When I got put on the local government affordable housing committee as an ex officio, it was really eye-opening, and listening to you as you articulated the issues of El Dorado County and sort of the uniqueness, you know, not just on the California side, but El Dorado County being kind of unique, you know, the way it's situated in the basin, and, you know, always a good advocate for your constituents, and you're always coming with good solutions and being solution-oriented and just with a positive attitude. I just thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Go ahead.
Sue, thank you. And, you know, I endorse everything that's been said about you, and I don't want to take time to repeat it. I would, but it's all been said very well. You've been a great friend, and I've learned so much by watching you through these meetings over the years. It's really helped me, and I appreciate that. I certainly appreciate all you've done for the lake, and I think that your constituents will greatly miss you. Now, I know there's always a couple. But for those naysayers I would say that you've done a tremendous service for them and for the lake, and I thank you very much.
Thanks, Bud. And I see Belinda's hand is up, and then
yes, thank you. And Sue, I really regret that I'm not able to be there today, because I just feel like everyone else, I want to give you a big hug. And you have always been so welcoming, and I, for one, significantly appreciated that as being someone who, you know, parachutes into Tahoe. And you were kind of my bellwether for making sure that I understood what the issues were. Always just so thorough, so knowledgeable about the breadth of policy issues that we deal with. And I'm going to miss you sorely. So hopefully we'll be able to catch a cup of coffee and take a hike one day when I'm up there. So thank you again for all of your service. We're really going to miss you.
Thank you, Belinda. And Wes, you raised your hand as well.
I did. Sue, I'm going to miss you. You have been a doggone good neighbor. You have shared your thoughts with me. You've clarified some issues for me. And rather than go into what everybody else has said, just thank you so much for being who you are.
Thanks. Appreciate that, Wes. There was another hand. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Ash.
Just to thank you for being an elected official in California, which especially in El Dorado County, and doing such a good job of representing those diverse interests, but not only for the county on TRPA. As a fellow Californian, I really appreciate seeing you in action doing that. So thank you.
And any others? Yes.
Ditto. Thank you, Sue.
Sue, I have to add in, no one on this board has learned more than I have from you. Trying to serve on all the boards and all the committees, CTC, TTD, TRPA, my eyes were
not wide open when I signed on for the job, obviously, and the amount of time and the challenges, especially in these last 3 years, because right as I came on, we were dealing with short-term rentals, then we had COVID, and then we had the Caldor fire, and then, you know, obviously this year, the mosquito fire. So we have just had so many other things going on in our districts and in our communities and trying to navigate all that. And the leadership programs you've steered me to have paid off for governance for our county because of your leadership, and for TTD because of your leadership, and so much more. And all the things people said about you're always upbeat, willing to take a call, willing to give advice, share your wisdom, and you're truly going to be missed. Yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you, Cindy. And thank you all for all those wonderful comments. I wish I deserved them all, but
I'm going to do the opposite of what Jim Lawrence did.
Now you can go, Bill.
I can go. But when I was dealing with how the local government committee, I didn't think much of when I was becoming a chair, because it just, you know, became all the local officials and they hardly ever met. And I thought, well, we needed to put housing in there. And I convinced Joanne and Julie that, yeah, that would be a good idea. And then I didn't know Sue that well, but I knew that Sue and Marcia had such a good time in some of our meetings that, you know, she might have the perfect personality to deal with some of these tough issues. And you did. And I sat here in that chair there watching us kind of wrestle with the whole issue of how we're going to deal with short-term rentals. And Jim Lawrence, who also I agreed to go on as a non-voting member, came up with kind of like, there's a good solution. And then John Hester, again, as he always does, came up with such, yeah, this would be a good way to do it. People have said it, you do have just a nice kind of common sense way, just kind of dealing with those issues. And I wish you well. You will be missed. But also, you know, I think you're going to have a great time in Colorado and all the other things you love to do. And so I'll shut up.
So with that, that concludes our board comments. I do need to ask if there's any public comment on this item. Oh, yes. Come on up, Karen. Sue, while that's going on, you have a public member.
Oh, I just also wanted to take the opportunity to thank Sue for all of her leadership of local government and housing committee. It's always, yes, you're always, like everybody said, but you're very enthusiastic and supportive and encouraging. So it's been great working with you. Thank you.
Thanks, Karen. Any other public comment? Anybody online?
Madam Chair, there are no hands raised to comment on this item.
Great. Well, let's get a motion on the floor. Would anybody like to make a motion to approve that? So moved. Ashley made the motion. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Well, we'll now move to item 6C, and this is the resolution recognizing governing board member William, California Senate Rules Committee appointee, and I'm going to run up there now. So I'll read the resolution, and then we'll go. Haley, will you do the honors? Resolution recognizing governing board member William Bill Yates, California Senate Rules Committee appointee, for his service to the Lake Tahoe region. Whereas Bill Yates has served as the California Senate Rules Committee appointee to the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency Governing Board from 2013 to 2022. Whereas he has contributed greatly to upholding the Bi-State Tahoe Regional Planning Compact and supporting the restoration, protection, and enhancement of Lake Tahoe and its communities. Whereas among Bill's many contributions to the Lake Tahoe region, he has served as an informal part-time member of the TRPA watercraft crew.
Whereas he has served as a member of the Legal Committee, the Environmental Improvement Transportation, the Environmental Improvement Committee, Transportation Public Outreach Committee, and the Threshold Update Initiative Stakeholders Working Group. And whereas Bill has served as chairman of the Regional Plan Implementation Committee chair, as that committee addressed multiple important regional plan and code of ordinance amendments. And whereas he served tirelessly as the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency Governing Board Vice Chair from 2016 to 2018, and as chair from 2018 to 2020. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Governing Board of the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency does hereby express its sincere appreciation for Bill's many years of service to the Lake Tahoe region and extends its best wishes for all of his sustainable, low vehicle miles traveled future endeavors. We didn't throw bird watching in, but we'll get that in too. So that'll be passed and adopted here in a few minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Secretary, please go ahead.
Thank you. Bill, I don't even know what to say, but thank you for everything you taught me about California, as others have that are from California. So I really appreciate that. Even though my husband is from California, he's been in Nevada since 74. So just saying. But you have really been an inspiration to me, along with Sue, because you've taught me so much about California, and that I have to look at both California and Nevada whenever I make decisions, because there's people from both sides of the island, so to speak. And I really appreciate that. I really appreciate where you came from, your thinking. It doesn't always agree with mine, but you've taught me through that what I need to look at and how I need to look at it differently. And I really want to thank you for all of that and everything that you've done. You've been a tremendous asset to this whole committee. And I just want to thank you very much. And the emails have been very interesting, because I didn't know for sure what they were. But we did find out. We got to the bottom of it. But thank you very much for everything. And again, I don't even know how many times you've brought something to our attention that we didn't know about in this committee that you've been able to talk about. And you are very articulate when you do. And so I want to thank you for your knowledge and what you've been able to give to me. Thank you.
Bud, and then Ashley.
Thank you very much, Barbara. That's very sweet. Thank you.
Well, Bill, you've been a mentor for all of us. I know that, at least as far as I'm concerned, I mean, it's been a pleasure to work with you and previously with Clem Belt, and the two of you, I just don't know how we'll ever replace you. You're just have been great for the lake, and it's truly appreciated. And, you know, I'm a lawyer and you're a lawyer. And, you know, as we lawyers get older and start moving on to retirement, you know, it's all we have is our name, our good name. And your name is right up there at the top of the list. You have the respect and the appreciation of everyone you've ever worked with, and that includes all of us. And I thank you very much for that.
Very much.
I mean, ditto, but that was, both of you said it exactly well, but also just adding to that, thank you for initiating me and Vince in how to represent California well on the TRPA, and giving us so many good things to think about and guidance on how we think about the issues. It's only been a year, and we've learned so much from you, and I just really appreciate it and look forward to learning and growing more, and probably calling on you now and again to ask for some advice.
Thanks, Ashley.
Vince, and then Shelley.
Yeah, I was thinking back to my first experience here at TRPA, and it was being set up for a cocktail with Jim and Bill. And after talking to you guys for an hour, my head was spinning, and I was like, holy cow, with the things those guys have done and the things those guys know. And it was a little bit overwhelming, quite honestly. But it is really amazing, all the stuff that you've done before TRPA for California, and then on TRPA, hearing about everything. And I am worried about all the stuff, you know, that is now flying away to to a happier place. But I really do appreciate all the talks and advice and things and just your presence. I think I would really like to have your presence, and I don't think I'll get there, but I'm going to work at it. And you've been a great role model. So thank you so much. You've been a great role model, is what a TRPA board member should be. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Vince.
Shelley?
So, Vanna, who's going to be my Vanna when we're doing public presentations? Bill, it's been a pleasure. I have to admit, we kind of, tease one another. We kind of tease one another about my suspicions, because as a former attorney for the Coastal Commission, I thought, oh, my God. Oh, there it is. There you are, in action. Okay. That's great. But, that was you had a task to perform, as legal counsel for the commission. And I know that you believe sincerely in the causes that you support. But on this board, you brought incredible balance and sense of perspective that I think all of us appreciate and respect. And I mean, your endurance when you were going through personal trials and health issues is really amazing, and something that all of us should strive to emulate, when we have similar challenges. But you are a consummate gentleman and a wonderful person. You'll be missed.
Thanks, Sue, and then Jim. Perfect. Thank you. What can I say? Well, I mean, we've had some great conversations. What I love, I think, most about you is how you can bring in a story and relate that to whatever it is we're talking about, what we're going to be voting on, and relate it to it, to talk about the Coastal Commission or musical instruments or what are birds, whatever the story is. It's always fascinating and so interesting to hear you speak about things that are not just, things we talk about in here, but in the world, and your perspective on it. It's always fascinating to me. And I really appreciated those conversations we've had. And I'll say thank you. I've always felt that you are one of those senior people that when you talk, everybody stops to listen, because you always have an interesting way and an edge on it that is unique and is important to hear. So thank you so much. It's been really a great pleasure.
Thank you very much, Sue.
Thanks, Haley. I'm at a loss for words, Bill, and it's just this hard afternoon with you and Sue and Barbara leaving. It's been such a pleasure. I will share this. As it was mentioned during one of the presentations, sort of the dark days around 2011, 2013, when the two states weren't getting along and the compact was at risk of being blown up, I was lurking in the shadows in different meetings. One of those meetings, and I won't say who was there, but your reputation preceded you when you were appointed to the board, and unfairly, quite honestly, because the meeting I was in was, and now California has appointed that Jeep Deacon. I actually won't repeat it, because there was a lot of fear at that time. We weren't not getting along, the two states. There was a fear that here's this environmental lawyer with, Coastal Commission work, and that's not going to fit Nevada's, view of things. And there was a lot of fear. And you quickly dispelled all of that with your common sense thinking, with your way of being such a leader by just being so articulate and calm and common sense to be able to get us to conclusions and to get us to a good place. And that is a skill that I aspire to. And I will continue to kind of in the back of my mind think, well, what would Bill do here? Just going to greatly miss you. And you've been a good friend on the board. You've been a good friend to Lake Tahoe. It's a tremendous loss, but I'm happy for you and your next endeavors, and wish you the very best of luck.
And I will jump in here before I go online. Everyone said it, but I have to say it to you as well. I had the pleasure to get to know you a little better at the board retreat, and role model and mentor, articulate statesman, all the time you put into this, Bill. It's so impressive, and it's something to aspire to. Thank you for getting to know me and the new board members and taking the time to explain things to us. Thank you for the extra time you put into everything.
the thoughtfulness you bring to this board. And I think Ashley's right. I think we're probably still going to call you. So don't block our numbers. Thank you. And let's go online.
So I'll just jump in, Bill. Well, everyone has said it so well, but you know, I'll do it my way, which is that you made sense of the Tahoe policy ethic for me, the alphabet soup of Tahoe terminology. I just, you know, had to listen always very carefully to the way that you put things so that I could understand, you know, what the process was all about. And I think if I have one regret is that I never got to do that drive with you and Clem from Sacramento to Tahoe, because I know I just would have learned so much. I had the pleasure of working with you, you know, before Tahoe, and I, you know, needless to say, you know, you have made such an impact with, you know, Tahoe, the state of California, in terms of your environmental policies that you've supported, how you've tried to shape environmental law through your, you know, work privately and in, on boards that we have all benefited from, I think, significantly. So I just want to say, keep in touch with us, and we definitely can do nothing but, you know, get our brains a little bigger by virtue of being in your presence. So thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Belinda.
Wes? Can't tell Wes. Okay. You might be done with comments, Madam Chair.
Except for mine. Of course, except for yours. Bill.
Excuse me. I was on mute.
Yes, go ahead, Wes.
I would just like to say that when I came on board this organization, and I was told that you were the California guy, I thought, oh, well, never mind. Oh, darn. And I want to thank you for opening my mind to some areas where it might have been closed, and for always listening to what I had to say, not always agreeing, but at least listening to me. And I want to thank you for your stewardship. Job well done.
Thank you very much, Wes.
And Bill, I so echo everything everybody has said. I can't exactly remember when I met you, but I do remember meeting you and walking along the Tahoe City Golf Course to talk about what we could potentially do. You took the time as a governing board member to come out with an open mind and look at the challenges of redeveloping Tahoe City and in my career there, and trying to figure out what we could do. You were open. You brought credibility to this organization, I think, being that California guy that I'm very proud of, because you fought for our oceans. You fought for so many other things before you fought for this lake. And you are the statesman. You are the wisdom. And, you know, I think that I know you've made Lake Tahoe better, and I know you've made me better. And I thank you for that.
Thank you very much, Cindy.
Are there members of the public wishing to make comment on this item?
Madam Chair, there is one.
There is one. Go ahead, Dan. Yep.
I don't even know how to use the public comment one. Oh, nice. I just wanted to thank Bill for all of his work on the Threshold Update Working Group over the years. And most importantly, for always making himself available. I think it was like 2 years ago at this time, we were in the dog days of VMT. And we were at a dinner party on a Friday night, and it was 9 o'clock. And I think Bill and I were exchanging texts still. And I looked over to my wife and I was like, I got to call him. We got to work it out. This is 9 o'clock on a Friday night, by the way. And she's like, you're going to get fired and you are going to lose friends. So you should reconsider this. And I didn't reconsider it. And probably even more crazy, Bill answered the phone. And we probably had an hour conversation. And I just want to say I appreciate everything you've done. Thanks a lot.
Madam Chair, would you like me to entertain the motion? Is there a motion to adopt the resolution? All right.
You can. No, go,
sorry. Ashley and Sue made the motion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you all. Thank especially staff. This has been a long day for all of you, but I'm most grateful for your kindness, your openness to let me tinker with policies and suggest things. You're always very open. I didn't really know what to expect. I know that based on what Jim said, I was told also by Senate staffers that they were worried about you, and it's it was in fact I felt always very comfortable here, but I definitely benefited greatly by having Clem on board and having those trips back and forth with Clem. That really helped ground me. It was a wonderful 10 years, really was. A lot of stuff happened. I still can't believe that Shelley asked me to be vice chair only a month after Carol passed away and made me have to think about, but I'm glad I did. I'm glad you gave me that opportunity. COVID was a little weird when we first had to go into virtual mode. I just feel Zachary's eyes roll when he considered the various problems I had with the technology at times, but we got through it, but I'm most grateful, and it's been a weird day, but I really wish you all well, and thank you again for your support, and especially staff for their support, especially when I was chair. Thank you.
So that brings us to agenda item 6D. And this is the resolution recognizing former Executive Director Joanne S. Marchetta. Information on this item can be found on page 379. And Shelley is going to start off by reading the resolution.
I'd rather not turn my back to you, so maybe you could come up and sit next to Julie. This is Tahoe Regional Planning Agency, TRPA resolution number 2022-. A resolution recognizing former Executive Director Joanne S. Marchetta for her service to the Lake Tahoe region. Whereas Joanne S. Marchetta has served as the longest tenured executive director in the history of the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency. Whereas she has contributed greatly to upholding the Bi-State Tahoe Regional Planning Compact and supporting the restoration, protection, and enhancement of Lake Tahoe and its communities. Whereas Joanne worked tirelessly to create a culture of collaboration within the agency and the Tahoe region to bridge divides between people and organizations and to create a sense of shared stewardship in the basin. Whereas during her tenure, she and her staff completed significant projects that were critical for the continued operation and success of the agency, including but not limited to major amendments to the regional plan and code of ordinances in 2012, an updated water quality management plan, a sustainability action plan, a shoreline plan and code amendments, revision of the development system, multiple regional transportation plans, sustainable communities strategic plans, multiple corridor plans, a plug-in electric vehicle plan, and more. Whereas many of those projects, including the 2012 Regional Plan Sustainability Action Plan and plug-in electric vehicle plan, received local California, Nevada, Western United States, and national planning awards. Whereas in partnership with local governments in the Tahoe region, multiple area plans have been prepared, adopted, and are being implemented. Whereas through collaboration with local, state, federal, and private sector partners, the Environmental Improvement Program has now exceeded $2.7 billion in projects to protect and enhance Lake Tahoe. And whereas Executive Director Joanne always strives for continuous improvement in agency processes and procedures, her staff and herself, in order to leave the organization better prepared to address the increasing quantity and complexity of issues facing the region. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Governing Board of the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency does hereby express its congratulations and gratitude to Joanne for all the achievements made during her tenure as Executive Director and extends its best wishes to her and all of her future endeavors. And and there's more. Passed and adopted by the Governing Board of the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency this, what is the date today? This 14th day of December 2022, by unanimous vote, I suspect. I like to say, and I think I had something to do with Joanne's acceptance of the executive directorship of this agency. I was very impressed with her performance as legal counsel, and frankly knew kind of instinctively that she had what it took to develop these cooperative relationships. I remember, and I've shared this with her before, I was on the committee that hired Joanne as legal counsel, and one of the questions I asked was, what's better, a bad settlement or good litigation? And her comment was a bad settlement. And I knew at that point that she was focused on the building bridges and not burning them and finding a way to accommodate all of the interests of parties in the basin for the best possible outcome. And Joanne, it's been a pleasure serving with you all these years. And, I'm looking forward to you opening your acupuncture practice, because I need a good acupuncture. I lost my chiropractor, and so I'm in need of some acupuncture. So I'll be the first one standing in line to avail myself of your services. So Joanne, thank you so much for all that you've done. And I guess I should stay up here and Haley?
Barbara?
Thank you so much. I can't thank you enough, Joanne, for your leadership. I have to tell you that my husband and I owned a condo for 24 years. When we first came up, we belonged to Save the Lake Tahoe. And then when stuff started going, hitting the fan, we pulled out. We went away, didn't have anything to do with it. You came on board. Things started to change, and we reunited with Lake Tahoe. And I am so proud to be a Secretary of State for Nevada, to be able to come up here and be on this board. But what you've done is you created an atmosphere where you had both the California and the Nevada side together. And we were really concerned about that. From what I was hearing, I was in the legislature at the time, and I was hearing about how bad Lake Tahoe was and how bad everything was going to be and that we were looking at pulling out. So I want to thank you very much for everything that you've done, seeing you at the fundraisers, all of the events over the years. I want to thank you very much for everything you've done and everything that you've done for Lake Tahoe. Thank you.
Bud?
Well, Joanne, you're back again. But I did want to tell you that, and I guess thank you. Maybe not such a great thanks, but you're the reason I'm on this board. And it's because I got to know you back in the bad old days when I was on the Bi-State Fire Commission. But you were a friendly face here on the board when I was offered the appointment. And I thought, oh, I don't know. I don't know anything about this stuff. But then I thought about, well, who do I know there? And I thought, well, I know John Marshall, and I know you from the fire days. And so that's why I'm here today, for good or bad. And I want to thank you for it, because it's been a great experience for me. And, you know, you were wonderful to work with when you were here. Don't go very far, because you're a resource for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara.
Sue.
Yeah,
thank you, Barbara.
Joanne, I can't tell you how much I've already missed you. I mean, gosh, and it's been wonderful having Julie, of course, because she's a homie, so that's easy. But I mean, I was so inspired by your leadership, truly.
I wrote down all the things you were talking about because I had three EDs I've had to hire in the last 3 months. I'm just going to repeat because some of these things are you. You know, you say to find someone who can lead from behind, a classic servant who puts personal growth and, over personal success. That's you. There's a grain of truth in all arguments, but you must find the connector that binds it. You always found connectors. And that is truly, I think, one of the greatest strengths that I've learned from you is how to do that. That's finding that glue that connects us all, finding that grain. And I can't tell you how much it's meant for me to watch you and to be able to mentor others from what I heard from you. So thank you so much. And you are so missed. And I know you're going to have fun with your acupuncture and all those little needles, but but you know, you are missed already. Thank you for everything.
Thank you, Sue.
Jim?
Hi, Joanne. I didn't know about the acupuncture thing, but I guess I shouldn't be surprised because, you know, during your tenure, you moved the needle. So,
ooh.
Here all day. no, I mean, I you know, a lot, it's all been said, but you know, when I do think back, when I started working closer with you back in what I call kind of the dark days when the two states weren't getting along and things were really on the precipice, I can't think of a different or better person that could have navigated, you know, the agency through that and kind of kept it together between the two states, because they were just at very different places. And I you did a phenomenal job. And I am so thankful because I, you know, one, my heart is here at Tahoe and TRPA. This is why I moved to the area, is to work for TRPA. And so it kind of broke my heart to see the anguish between the two states. It also scared the heck out of me because the bill actually just pulled Nevada out of the compact and gave it all to me while I was running state lands. And so that was my, I was personally motivated. You know, again, I just, phenomenal leader. I learned a lot working with you. And I'm very thankful for that. And Tahoe, this agency, Nevada and California are just better off due to your service. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Bill?
Joanne, I really, really, I think the thing I really admired the most about you was your love for your staff. And I really think that you gave them the opportunities by coming up to the board, giving them that they had. As a result, the staff has a certain amount of strength, resiliency, and Julie benefits from that big time. I admire that. I know you and I had our moments, good and bad, you generally were pretty right because you're very focused on what you felt this needs to be done. And if I didn't get it immediately, you made it real clear. It's you made a part of the 10 years that I've enjoyed, was a big part of it. You weren't accepting right off the bat because I think you heard all these terrible things, but I have to tell you that you were one of those ones that I had to watch out for. But reality was, You sold me on the first tour we did around the lake, both you and Julie, because all the things that I've been told before, you pointed out, yeah, this is a problem. The Keys is a problem, but here's the things we need to do. And so I came out of this with, yeah, there's the glass is not half empty. It's just half full. And I also remember that little weird period of time where we tried to build a bridge between the Sierra Club and ourselves, and we just didn't quite do it. But there was an absolute commitment, whether the Sierra Club will ever believe it, that you really, really wanted to find that way that we could work with the club. And it just didn't quite happen. They never quite bought into either the plan or your perspective or any whatever it was. But it was a shame. But it wasn't because you weren't willing. You were clearly willing. We had many meetings in Sacramento where you came up and we We talked about how we could try to pull that off, but it just didn't happen. But I don't think it was your fault. And thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I think everybody that loves this lake should just thank you. Take care. And acupuncture, cool. I have a great acupuncturist. I didn't know I could. Can I? It's good.
Great. Wes, did you want to make a remark?
I do. I already made it a little earlier today, but when we moved here 31 years ago, the TRPA didn't mean Tahoe Regional Planning Agency. And other than the royal pain, I can't say the rest of it. But Joanne, you changed all that. You made the TRPA a kinder, gentler place. You continued to work hard for the lake. And you won some of us over. We came to know that you weren't that bad person sitting back there taking away all of our property rights and making us buy points to build whatever we needed to build. And you changed the whole community. And thank you for that. And thank you for welcoming me when I joined 4 years ago. Thank you, Joanne.
Thanks, Wes. I don't see others. Joanne, your leadership, your commitment, your dedication, your passion for this basin, for Lake Tahoe, is beyond compare. And what you did for the staff here, what you did for the board, and of course, I've got to bring it back to me. Your support, I wouldn't be here today in this seat and certainly on this board if you hadn't encouraged me to move up. So thank you, I think. I'm going to hold back on the, you know. But you really have led the way for this organization, and certainly being sitting on the outside and watching it grow under your leadership. And Julie will take it from here. John did in the interim. What a team you've put together and supported. And we have great things to do. And I know you're just down the hill.
Thank you, Cindy.
We'll go to any public comment. I think we've outstayed many of our board members in public with that. So now I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Okay. We'll have to pick who made that motion. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
I am just completely heartened by the kind comments that all of you have made. Transitions are good. And Shelley, where's Shelley? You know, you said three certain things, death, taxes, and change. I'll go with two of those, change and death, okay? Taxes aren't necessarily certain. But, you know, I am greatly gratified that my legacy in this region is going to be having delivered the culture change around partnership and collaboration. And it took us so far, so much further than we could have gone. And I've worked with so many dedicated board members. You know, Bill, just a diplomat at heart. Shelley is the consummate consensus builder. And Sue is an advocate for her constituents. And Barbara, I cannot thank you enough for your integrity and political courage and your hatred of buoys. And Jim, your depth of experience and knowledge, and you know that goes over to Cindy as well. How many decades have you been working with the issues of this basin? You know, Bud. Yeah, I remember the long nights on after Angora, and I guess the lawyers stuck together, John Marshall and you and I. But I can't thank you as board members, all of you as board members, especially those who I built friendships with and long tenure with. You know, and then beyond that, I have to call out my senior leadership team, John Hester, Julie Reagan, Chris Kyler, John Marshall, and more recently, Angela. And God, what would I have done without my right hand and left foot, Maria? You know, honest to God, she kept me pointed in the right direction. We met every Monday morning. We didn't always think alike, but we got really good at thinking together. And we were a fabulous team. And you're lucky to have them continue. I have to say thank you to my staff, my former staff. God, they are in the fire every day. They felt it today. And they have what it takes. They have the mettle that it takes, even when they feel demoralized. They have what it takes, and no board can deliver without their talent and commitment and continuing to appreciate them. You know, I have to say thank you to the partnership, the TIE steering committee, the 80 plus partners of the TIE, and all of the representatives on the TIE steering committee. And, you know, I could go on and on, but my passion is collaboration and collaborative leadership. I will take the expertise that I gained over almost two decades here, 17 and a half years, and I'll take it on the road, and I'll take it to working on bigger issues that are in front of us. So I just want to say thank you to everyone for everything and all of you. And it has been a wildly successful, good ride. I mean, look back at the interview statement when you all hired me, Shelley, and honestly, I can say I accomplished everything I said that I was going to. And there's nothing better than walking away with that kind of satisfaction. So thank you all. I'll miss you all. Goodbye. And my parting words are keep the partnership together and maintain those connections. Thank you all.
Right now. Mm-hmm. And before you leave, Joanne, I did want to get a picture of all four of our departing leaders. No. And Jim, we'll just all stand and do a standing ovation when I get done with it. Well, we're skipping the. Okay, with that, staff has delivered another holiday gift in that we can skip item number 7. We'll bring it back in January, our planning matters. Am I correct on that? Dan Segan has been told, and we'll move on. Are there any reports that are essential that we hear tonight?
Madam Chair, thank you. Julie Reagan, one essential report is that we do have a beautiful cocktail reception that Maria has planned following this meeting. I know the hour is late, but we do have a couple of fun gag gifts for departing members. So there is an incentive for those of you to spill over to the idle hour on your way home. Please mark your calendars for March 22nd and 23rd. The 22nd is the board meeting, but we're going to do a retreat to follow up on a lot of the issues that we said today. And I just can't, and if that doesn't work for everyone, we certainly can relook at the calendar. I do want to say it's such a great honor to follow Joanne and the great leadership of this board to take us into the next 50 years and to put us on firm footing. I feel that the state of our partnership is strong and getting stronger. And Joanne, thank you for your leadership. And I couldn't be more honored to work with all of you going forward. And I will truncate the rest of my report. And thank you for your great discussion today.
Thank you, Julie. And then I'll look for any other committee reports.
I'm going to give one quick just because I wanted to congratulate John Marshall. The legal committee wholeheartedly approved a salary increase and also a bonus, a $10,000 bonus. And we had a long discussion about how we wish John, we could duplicate John into many more people because he does such great work. And so I just wanted to congratulate him again and say that the legal committee was really happy to make that recommendation today.
Except for the blazer. I believe we were going to get rid of that.
You're right. There was an asterisk. The bonus came with buying a new blazer. That did happen.
John, did you have a quick report you wanted to provide?
Well, I don't know what you wanted. We don't have a quorum.
Oh, we don't anymore.
So. California, unless we have, do we have a California member online?
I don't. Only see three. I think Belinda had left when I checked before.
No.
Four. Wait a minute. One, two, three, four. No, we have four. Okay. We can go ahead if you want to take action on, you need to take action on those other items. The legal, it's do or die.
Okay. I'm sorry, I'm not following which action items. Oh, well.
8B1.
Okay. Okay. Sorry.
I have a certain self-interest in keeping this item on the agenda.
Yeah. So can I move John? Can I make a motion to increase John Marshall's base pay to $197,609.30?
You can make it one motion too.
Okay. Per year retroactively to August 7, 2022, and to adjust John Marshall's paid leave accrual to reflect the total years of service, 18 years to TRPA, and to approve the $10,000 bonus as recommended by the legal committee. And the blazer is debatable.
Okay, with that, Mario, will you call the vote?
No, we need a public comment, please.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Thank you. That's why you're getting the bonus. Public comment.
I cast my non-vote for John.
Great. Is there any public comment on this item?
Madam Chair, there are no hands raised to comment on this item.
Thank you. Then Mario, will you call the roll?
Ms. Salding?
Yes.
Ms. Conrad Seda?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski? Ms. Faustinos? Ms. Diss? Mr. Friedrich? Ms. Hill? Mr. Honigman? Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Okay. Madam Chair, the motion passes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any governing board member reports? Any other committee reports? And then our final public comment period. This is for any member of the public that wishes to address us on any item. Are there any remaining public comments?
Madam Chair, there are no hands raised to comment on this item.
Okay. So with that, we will adjourn at, is it really 5:32 p.m.? Is there a motion?
So moved.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you.